This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff.
Liftoff.
A tremendous day to you whenever it is that you happen to be listening to this show. My name is Garnet Lee. Thanks for joining us. I am back from
Welcome back, sir.
From the boat.
You survived the
Fuck that, ocean. I came back, which was...
You're energized.
There was definitely a long period there where I was ready to not come back.
Really? You just wanted to just be adrift on the open sea?
I was like, I could sign a contract to work on this boat.
I mean, the world was pretty fucked up while you were gone.
It's true.
That was a little weird.
You leave us for one week and everything goes to hell.
And it was also odd being isolated on a cruise ship where you and intentionally trying to isolate ourselves. And then at some point in time, seeing a television, because I mean, look, it has satellite television, all that kind of happened, going, whoa, shit, there was a bombing in what the fuck?
Oh. Isn't that weird?
All right, I'm going to go back to my drink.
I was doing a Shakespeare festival in Nevada during 9/11, and I felt so disconnected from the world anyway. And then when something surreal happens, it feels like,
okay,
just things aren't even, there's no connection to anything.
9/11, completely bizarre.
I mean, we don't have to go on a tangent.
But I'm just going to want to make a quick tangent. Was at the time I was still a regional manager for Electronics Boutique, and I was supposed to fly that morning because it was one of my travel weeks. And I got up that morning and it was like, wow, I guess I'm not going to the airport because everything was shut down. And it was
derailing the show into that.
All right, Mr. Jeff Cannata here, bringing us down before we can even get up.
Sorry.
Two N's, one T.
Yeah, I'm excited. This is fun. We're recording at night again. We've been recording in the mornings the last 2 weeks, but...
mornings, nights, whatever. We're recording at night, and I'm drinking peppermint tea, and there's water. We're going crazy. Completely gone defective. Also here at the far end of the table, who now has no more jokes for the rest of the year, Mr. Christian Spicer.
I had a great Twitter day today. Well, a couple days ago. Or whenever you listen to this, go back a few days in my Twitter feed.
Whenever you listen to this.
But I wanted to say
whenever
hi.
I'm funny on Twitter.
It was a good day. I did an improv or stand-up show at UCB New York, and a listener, Matt. So I know there was for sure one listener came and said hi after the show.
Awesome. Confirmed.
So that was cool, and thanks to everyone that came out. It was awesome to do a big show in that city. It was tons of fun. So
you've gone coast to coast now.
Bi-coastal.
Hey, sweet. Should we do our big Megaton announcement right at the top?
Drop it.
Should we?
Drop it.
Are we able to?
Like it's hot.
They haven't said we can't. I don't know why we couldn't. That means if we don't, people won't show up.
Now you should drop it.
Yeah, so big news. The show that Christian and I do together called Double Jump, which is a comedy video game show with sketches and live guests. And it's been a live show. It's continuing to be a live show. But now we're going to be on the Nerdist Network.
Yeah, Nerdist Channel. So people have been clamoring for a way to see it that aren't in LA. And it's going to be on the Nerdist Channel. And you can see it there. But you can also see it live May 30th.
Yeah, we're going to be recording 4 episodes in front of a live audience.
In Burbank?
No, in West Hollywood, really, at the Nerd Melt Theater.
Yep.
And it's on May 30th, and we're doing 4 episodes. These are sort of a trial to see if we'd be able to do more for Nerdist. So we really want to have a big, awesome, rowdy audience there. They're lining us up.
First
time, we don't have to book our own guests.
Awesome.
They're lining us up some really major, awesome guests. I don't think we should mention anybody.
I don't think we should mention them, but I already have some questions lined. Like, every time I get an email with a guest, I'm like, wow,
yeah.
This is great.
We didn't have their phone number. please, if you are excited about the idea of that, if you can get yourself to Los Angeles on May 30th, please come over to the Nerd Melt Theater. I don't know how much tickets are, but they're not going to be very much.
I'm going to do my best, and I'll say it here so that they're listening. I'm going to do my best to make it free. And if they're not free, it's going to be as cheap as possible.
Yeah.
And it's all ages, and it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun doing these shows, and this is really taking it to the next level. So we need your help. We'll stop playing the show at this point. But
Pimpitude.
Yeah.
Yes. It's going to be fun. Also joining us, Mr. Andrew Yoon here. he's being quiet.
Yeah, I'm like, what am I supposed to say? Hi, I guess.
Hey, ho.
Hey, what's up?
That was very good. It was very jocular, very radio DJ sort of. Hey, what's up? It's going good. All right, so we have games to talk about. Andrew is here because he's probably been playing more games than I have on the boat. However, Jeff and Christian have been playing games, and we also been playing some Star Trek. I've got some topics to talk about. Plus, we will waste no time jumping right into the breaking news of the day. Oh my God, there's a date for the Xbox announcement. What? Holy crap.
And now
you know
the breaking news of the day. This has been breaking news of the day. That's all we need to know is that
I know, really, there's a date.
Right?
There's a date, dude. That means now we've only got 3 or 4 more weeks to like wildly speculate and make up stuff.
I guess the interesting part is that the announcement was couched in you're going to hear the next evolution of gaming, TV, media, and entertainment. So not just gaming, guys. So I think that's the most telling part is that
it's a whole new way to order pizza.
Also a new logo. I don't know if anyone noticed.
No.
But the logo the invite is a brand new Xbox logo.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the rumored part with the sideways 8 for the Infinity, which the more you see it, the more you think, yeah, that's probably it. Don't you think? What do you guys think?
I mean, my guess is that it's just going to be Xbox. It's a reboot.
Like the Tomb Raider of
iPhone.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Just get rid of the number and be like, it's Xbox. Because, you know, if they make it Xbox 8 or Infinity, the 8 on its side, it's gonna be dated.
If they go Infinity, they're really kind of putting themselves in a corner for the next one.
I mean,
Infinity plus one. All of a sudden, we're on a schoolyard. We're 6.
Dude, it's awesome. Xbox Infinity plus one. You don't think that'll work?
I think the one after that would be Double Dog Dare Xbox.
Dun dun dun.
I'm with Andrew. I think it's Xbox. I think the TV thing and the announcement is telling. I think Microsoft wants Apple. And I think that's going to be a big focus. And I think they're going to dress the new Xbox or just Xbox and not try
just like they did with the iPad.
Yeah.
All I can say is all that TV stuff is figuring right into what I was thinking about how they could run a subsidized model and be part of all that side of the distribution world and get. I mean, look, they certainly, I think, would be interested in trying to rally support from some of these monolithic old companies that are trying to hold on to distribution channels in any way they can, cable television, whatever it might be,
yeah,
different
HBO
conduits into the car,
is now
into the
officially
house.
Considering letting Go be independent.
Letting like, Go.
Letting
finally,
Go, which would be awesome.
Finally.
For me, would be awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I it's interesting, and I know people have talked about it before and speculation, whatever. Now we have a date, and we'll get to see most of it. I'm sure they'll hold stuff back for E3. But, I mean, everybody wants to own as much of that as possible, right? And this is going to be Microsoft's play and see if it can.
I think what's interesting is that the May 21st date has been out there for a really long time.
Yep.
On calendars for years, really.
There's been one every year.
It's strange.
But, yeah, it's interesting because The Verge had a report on that many, many, many weeks ago.
Yep.
And it makes me wonder, hey, if that rumor turned out true, What other rumors are going to turn out true at the actual reveal event?
Oh, well, now you're just like the guy at the craps table who thinks he's going to roll the same die every time because he rolled it once.
Well, I think there's credence for a lot of these rumors and reports.
Probably.
I think for the most part, people aren't just making it up and, you know, grabbing it out of their ass. You know?
I think
people do that.
They
do, but I think people know more than what has been said, or there's real information, I'm certain, has been leaked, and I think people throw it out with some bullshit so that they don't get caught being the one leaking the information.
Just a spoonful of bullshit makes the real stuff go down.
Like Packner. I feel like the things, the stuff he says that's wildly off base, I feel like he just does that for fun. And like, he's good at his job, and he says a lot of things that are pinpoint accurate sometimes. And then sometimes he's like, and Nintendo's going to die, and Pikmin are going to kill them, literally. And you're like, what? Or something crazy. And it's just kind of, you know, letting you know that.
Well, in all honesty, it's not the Michael Pachters of the world or the press of the world that have the inside information right now. It's the developers. And so, you know, to the extent that developers have whispered things or been one, you know, excitedly talking about something and, oh, shit, I wasn't supposed to say that. You know, yeah, obviously there's definitely some room for some of those rumors have gotten out. But I think that's why I haven't put too much worry into some of them, is because I think you just get, you know, like a part of the picture, and we'll have the whole picture on May 21st. When the press,
I don't think we're gonna get the whole picture. I don't think we're gonna get the price. We are gonna see the machine.
Oh, they have to.
I think so.
Major Nelson like tweeted that at Sony. He's like, have an event and don't show the console. Hashtag sigh or something like that. Yeah. Like, really snarky. Sigh. It really was.
Like, that's one way of doing it.
Yeah.
I want to see all the other tweets that are linked to hashtag sigh.
You know, the shape of that piece of plastic is really going to make a big difference.
Actually, I'm curious to see if the power brick is going to be as enormous as it was in the previous generations.
Bigger. It's only up from here.
Well, especially the original 360 power brick, which was pretty monstrous. It's been, you know, it's kind of slimmed down since then.
The power brick is pretty much the same size as the Xbox 360 Slim is right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Whoever, the first guy that thought of that was like, you know what we could do? We could take all this shit that's bulking up these things and just stick it at the end of the cord. Why not do that?
Hey, the Wii U does it as well.
Everybody does it now.
You should see Sony how skinny.
Sony has the power brick inside the machine.
That's true.
My computer is razor thin. It's just a monitor, and then I have this big brick that sits under my desk.
Exactly.
It does everything.
It's just a power brick.
It's this big tower that I put discs into.
My car is just four wheels and this gigantic power brick on top of it.
I have to say, the whole worrying about the power brick thing always was a little odd to me, but I guess because of my arrangement of my living rooms and stuff, I've always been able to just take that power brick and shove it behind some shit. And so
you can't push the shit. It's behind, flush against the wall.
Yeah, I could put it where I needed to. It wasn't the end of the world.
I always run into that problem where the power brick gets in between my bookcase or my TV stand and the wall.
Dude, it's like 3 inches wide. It's like...
That was the best sound ever!
A mic was adjusted, and then Jeff Canada lost his shit.
That's what it was. Mic was being adjusted.
Oh, man.
It's all right, Christian.
It's like that. You guys ever see that thing with William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, where supposedly
the shitty Star Trek game that came out?
That's a transition. But no, anyway.
That was a terrific transition. Too bad it's being ignored.
It's being ignored. Well, there's other news I haven't gone through because I didn't look at this, but...
was there some next-gen stuff I want to talk about if you guys are interested?
Why just Nintendo restructuring?
If you guys are interested... Too late.
If you guys are interested in a sort of like thought-provoking start to the show...
Let's do it.
You want to do
it?
Okay.
Try.
So...
We might have to take a nap afterwards.
I apologize. Everyone hates me.
So this will take a minute. So hold on. I need a little sip of my tea.
Ooh, now we're thought provoking.
Mm. That's delicious. It's peppermint tea.
Let me adjust my monocle. Terrible.
Come on, you got to get the whole.
No, I don't want to do that.
Ow! Just peed my pants. Thanks to tiop.coop.t.com.
What?
Christian and I listen to the same shows.
It's a WTF.
All right, so I was reading this blog that my friends over in Nerd Poker linked to me, and the topic of it was why the next generation will change games forever. Which is a sort of dialogue that's come up, of course, over the generation transitions for the last three, at least. But I kind of like the discussion that this person put together, and I thought it was really thoughtful. It was written by, and I'm sure to wreck this last name, Adrian Kamilarz.
Nope, nailed it.
Yeah. Chmielarz. So he is at theastronauts.com. They're a Warsaw game developer who's working on a game titled The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. But they also do design blogs. And so here's his blog. So he starts off with a thesis that next-gen hardware will change game design by force. So, you know, stop me if you've heard this argument before. Actually, don't stop me because then we won't have anything to talk about. But anyway. So he terms this, for this generation, as sim toy dissonance. And he made up that term to kind of cover the, you know, in visuals we talk about the uncanny valley. As you get closer and closer to something looking real, it gets more unnerving to you, the problems with it. And here he was talking about the uncanny valley between gameplay and the experience, where the closer you get to the real deal, the more the gamisms, or the pieces of it that are gamey, hurt the experience. So this whole thing was spurred by him finishing Bioshock Infinite and Tomb Raider, which, incidentally, I was kind of curious about this. He said that he thought Tomb Raider was the better experience of the two. Interesting. So just keep that in the back of your head because it fits into here. And here are some of the thoughts that he had while he was playing the game. Really, Lara, ammo packs in old forgotten temples don't weird you out? Really, Lara, your skin turns bulletproof when you're executing finishers on barely alive enemies? Really, Lara, setting things on fire annihilates them in a matter of seconds? So by contrast, Just stick with me here. We're going someplace. It's good. By contrast, he played Lego Lord of the Rings next at a friend's recommendation, and lo and behold, absolutely loved it. Like, fell in complete love with it, despite the fact that, number one, the game was... it was absolutely gamey as hell. You're out collecting coins. There's like things busting up into Lego pieces, but it all worked. And it was still deeply fun, engaging, and immersive because it was more like a toy. Well, at least this is his thesis. It says, the more the game is a toy, the more we enjoy its gaminess, the more the game is a sim. And using sim to describe these, you know, action adventures that try to look so realistic, the less we enjoy its gaminess. So the thing here that he wants to get to is that in these action games, we've had to come up with game metaphors to translate the ideas of things that happen in life to the language of video games. So here's some examples of those. Sometimes they're abstract. So you have like a stamina meter. That's a pretty good metaphor for, you know, your real life stamina, right? You're getting tired, the meter runs down, you can rest for a little bit and it comes back. Sometimes though they're more abstracted. So, you know, for instance, like the regenerating health bar, that in a video game, that's kind of like symbolic of, you know, like courage and hope and drive and willpower all sort of coming together and you rallying, you know, even though you've been shot or I don't know. It's a bit more abstract, right? So here's where things start to fall apart. The more abstract these game metaphors get, while the rest of the game goes the opposite direction towards trying to be realistic and more sim-like, the less you enjoy the experience. So here's the big part that I bolded out of this. I think it's really important. If you want people to buy into your next gen hi-fi action adventure, then you got to do away and unless you have a darn good, you know, plausible explanation for it, you got to drop these weapon wheels, regenerating health, and audio logs. Because no, people don't record their most intimate moments on 30 identical voice recorders and drop them around in random places. And the game metaphor of discovery and knowledge is just too abstract. And that the whole idea of these old game metaphors are dying and that we're in need of a new replacement. You know, you already are there, right? Because by the end of the generation, you've noticed this dissonance in Nathan Drake. Is he a mass murderer? Why is no one else in Columbia using Vickers? Why is it that Sierra fell when just one squad of Gears is able to kill thousands of locusts?
Well,
it's interesting.
I agree, but I don't agree that we're going to get there next gen, unfortunately. I think we're farther out than that.
So his wrap up to the thesis is that because the next gen is going to advance the presentation medium yet another step further than it is right now, and you're already having these very dissonant moments, that's going to put ever increasing pressure on design to come up to finding those new metaphors and finding us new ways to interact.
I think The Last of Us is a really great example of a current-gen game.
I hope so.
That's trying to address a lot of those concerns. And we've seen a lot of people talk about it at GDC, for example.
Definitely.
The term ludonarrative dissonance has always been there. Well, not always, but it's been something that people have been talking about. And I think when I was talking about Tomb Raider last, I was talking about how, for me, it was really bizarre that Lara would get stabbed, you know, through her stomach and then just walk around limping, occasionally touching her stomach in an animation.
It hurt a little bit.
Because the game is so grounded on that principle of this is real and visceral and gritty that I can't have that suspension of disbelief where I'll forget, yeah, you literally just got stabbed and you were starving a few minutes ago. Apparently you never have to eat after that. So I think
it was a very filling meal of deer, okay?
I mean,
I think it comes down to more... I think he makes a lot of interesting points or a lot of an interesting premise. And I think really what it comes down to is as the worlds get to a higher fidelity, we become more curious and it feels stranger that we're not able to interact with the world in a deeper
in
way.
In a more natural
way. One of the videos that I enjoyed watching that was sort of picking apart Bioshock Infinite was there's one part where you walk into an area and there's these guys in stockades with their heads in stockades. And, you know, you're able to blow shit up and move stuff. Why can't I unlock those guys? I feel like I kind of want to set those guys free. You know, and so all of these very binary interactions or very simplistic interactions of just like, you know, hey, it really is just a very pretty shooting gallery. But the world feels so vibrant and real and full of life and full of detail. I want to interact more. And I hope that it's more about pushing interactivity beyond just, hey, if it moves, shoot it.
This is what we've hoped for in prior generations, because to date, still what we do is we create ever more beautiful shadow boxes, right, within which there are items that have game rules applied to them. And if the item has the game rule applied to it, then you, Mr. Player, can go interact with it. But if it hasn't been applied to it, right, then it is simply static furnishing.
And we literally have systems built into the game of, like, activate your tricorder or whatever it is to show you an outline of the stuff that's in the game, and right, not just pretty window dressing.
But I don't think it's necessarily linked to fidelity. I think I'm glad we're getting to this point. I think this is just more games growing up and developers growing up and gamers growing up. Because I'd love to play... If Lego Marvel Superheroes or whatever the next Lego game, if that came out and it looked...
It's totally happening, by the way.
Oh, no, I know it is.
Yeah.
But, like, that type of game, like a game that's gamey and fun, but if it looked real, if it looked like real-life action figures, even real-life superheroes with amazing graphics, but...
You know superheroes aren't real, right?
You're in the game.
Game?
It'd be fun, because you're not, but I think it's when these games present you with a narrative that's supposed to be real and supposed to be engaging. And, like, even BioShock, you know, the art in that is very stylized. It's not going after photorealistic graphics, but because it's creating this narrative in this world, that's where things break down. I think had Tomb Raider looked like Wind Waker, like used a cartoony graphical style, but still presented the same type of game, where, like, this is real, this is gritty, you'd come up with these same problems in the world. And so I'm glad to see games getting to this point and developers getting to this, because I think indie developers handle it well with minimalist graphics sometimes and, you know, portraying systems that work in a game, yeah, that is the system.
You know, it's not...
Go ahead.
We're making strides with characters like Elizabeth from Infinite and Alex from Half-Life.
Yeah.
What if every character that you encountered was like Elizabeth or Alex? You know, that's where I want to get to, is where each character you walk up to is as vibrant and alive, and
they don't just sit on the beach while you shoot people. Yeah, they don't sit there and, like, have their picnic and look off in the distance.
They're not audio toggles that you walk up to trigger their little dialogue bit. You know, and I think we all hope that's where we're headed.
I think with ever-advancing artificial intelligence, yeah, I think that's going to be a huge thing. But I think I think game design is already addressing this in the current generation. I think a great franchise that tackles that problem head-on is Assassin's Creed. Regardless of what you think of the quality of the game, it does a really great job of establishing the rules of the universe. And I guess a lot of
workaround is...
It's a video game!
Yeah, we might...
Like, you're in a video game!
We might, yeah, totally. We might see more... games take that meta approach.
Well, it was a smart conceit of, like, you're totally inside the Animus, so you're...
Yeah. Totally.
And you're inside a video game. And it does... They've created a really interesting fiction around that gives you the excuse of, like...
But you have those problems when you're in the real world in that game, too.
When
you're out of
the game's real world.
When you're out of the Animus, it's not as if all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, I'm just going to leave this building.
No, you're not, Christian, because we can do that. You can't leave this building.
That's right. Why the Desmond sections have always been so disappointing.
Because the same rules apply. You're in a video... Oh, shit.
Because you expect so much more.
Sure.
And I think it's really interesting to see them fall so short of that. But I think developers are definitely going to be thinking about this. We're seeing it this generation, and next generation it's definitely going to...
So I sort of read this.
Just let me real quick say that the other side of this argument, though, is while I think we're sort of all on the same page of, like, wanting to push that forward, the other side of this argument is the reason stuff works like that is because it's fun like that. Like, why does she not get hurt while I'm doing a finishing move? Because if she did, it would be freaking not fun. Or why, you know, why?
Because that's the metaphors and the language of video games that we have established now. We need to establish a new one that is also fun and a great way to interact.
Right,
and fun way to play.
But, like, why can she get shot? Why does she get shot 40 times and then you
when
know,
you
brush
were a kid
off,
and we're
because that's more fun.
When you were
than,
a kid and having, like, imaginary play with your friends, did they always include mowing down hundreds and hundreds of dudes? Sometimes you play with your soldiers, but sometimes you did other things, right?
Believe me, you know that I'm totally on the page.
This is rhetorical. I was saying that rhetorically.
Yes, but what I'm saying too is a lot of the answers to why does it work that way or why does it is because that's to ensure you're still having a good time in that world.
But I think that that's also falling back on because we know that works.
True, but it's also like simplifying certain things, like, you know,
there's nothing saying, more simple than doing the things that you know how to do because you already know how to do them as a person.
And that's what will make the new thing that does it well the great thing. And it'll be like, oh, yeah,
I already know how to do this. I don't even have to learn anything.
Why weren't we all doing this?
So I looked at this. When I read this, I read it because the approach initially to me was technical in a little longer view sort of way. And I thought to myself, I wonder if what Adrian was getting at here is that as we go into this next generation, then a lot of the early games will probably still use these old metaphors, but the technology will make them look even that much better. And then we'll be that much more forced in our face, that divide between the two. And maybe that will continue to apply pressure to designers to take a different route of how, as they go to work on second generation games within this next wave of machines, they'll come at it with a different approach. They'll come at it with saying, you know what? I know what happened to that first wave of games, and I saw how that worked, and we've really got to push ourselves to find something else. And I think that's the kind of thing that that's where David Cage's head
Absolutely.
Is. And that's what's awesome about the sort of creative approach that he takes on that scale of budget. And I think that indie developers oftentimes are in that same sort of headspace of how do we not follow the rules that have been there before. Yeah. And I'll throw one more thing out there. I've been reading Ready Player One, which, by the way, is awesome. I'm so glad, like, and by the way, it's like I wrote the thing. There's so many, I kind of want to spoil it, but I won't spoil it. But
no,
like, the way that they found the first key, I actually remember as a kid playing that module in pen and paper.
Wow.
I was like, holy shit. I read just the rhyme and I'm like, that's going to be that, isn't it? And then like pages later, like, that's that. I was like, holy crap.
I enjoyed the book quite a lot. I found... I'm interested in what you think at the end.
Okay, so the strike for me out of this, the hit for me out of this is, we've been talking for a long time about how to interact with games through a better controller, and you guys are going to think I'm fucking nuts, and I'm willing to accept that you think I'm nuts, and maybe it's just because of what I'm reading, but are we going to get back to a place where instead of like trying to wave around in front of a Kinect and dealing with all of that, that if we had a really cool, well-designed set of haptic gloves, you would play a game with them? I think that I would.
I mean, I just saw the TED Talk about this, the chick that's trying to add texture, record the touch of something the same way you record a voice or a visual, take a photo. You take a touch photo of something, so you have these gloves where you run your finger over a surface of something and it records the feedback. Really cool. I just bring that up because it made me think of it. But to answer your question is, I think...
And I'm not talking.
I'm not talking
Nintendo Power Glove. I'm not talking about things. I'm talking about something that looks like a modern, sophisticated piece of gear. That instead of a controller in my hands, I just put on my two gloves to play with my game or whatever.
What you're hitting on is what is the big missing factor of Kinect, which is feedback of any kind. And Kinect is super cool in a technological perspective, but we as people interacting with something need to have feedback.
Definitely.
And in absence of that, it's not fun to just wave around and flail. And even with a Wiimote,
like steering with the Wiimote, you don't know your limit point or where the turn from.
Hitting your sword. And if I clang swords with the character on the screen, but I don't feel any clang, I mean, a vibration.
I can swing my Wiimote way faster than I can swing a golf club. And it's like that weird disconnect.
Yeah. So having a technology that can simulate that kind of feedback, I think is really cool. And then you can pair that with a Kinect style, something that's observing you full body so that it takes that data into consideration when it's creating whatever world it's creating. And then what I'm hoping, I've said on the show before, is that you combine all of that with Oculus Rift type technology. And now it's looking at my body so that when I wave my hand in front of my face, I see my digital hand come in front of my face. So it's just observing that.
So instead of ordering Domino's through your Xbox, you actually have to make the fucking pizza in virtual world and send
cooking
it to
yourself. Mar.
I mean, the thing is, I think we all want the holodeck to be real.
Of course.
Sooner rather than later.
Gaming is slowly going there. But at the same time, do you want to play FIFA like that? Do you really want to be that guy running around on the field? Do you want
what
to?
What I'm saying is, if I had that haptic glove,
do you want to be that guy in Gears where you're like running, taking cover,
no,
and actively
fun?
No, I don't.
But the thing is, that ties into that argument that we're talking about. You know, how much do you simplify things and gamify things, and how much more do you make it realistic? So there's this like clear desire, like, man, I want this golf club to feel as heavy as it does in real life.
See, I don't want those simulations. Having read Ready Player One, they're talking about, like, when he's talking about how he interacts in the world through the gloves, it's not by doing the exact same thing. It's by doing controller-like motions, but doing it with your fingers and your gloves, and you don't have to be holding anything. Like, maybe tapping my forefinger to my thumb is some motion inside the game, like pressing
X. Andrew makes a good point.
I don't want to hold a golf club. I don't want to do that.
Comparing that to the discussion we were just having based on that thesis you read, about how, you know, some of that stuff, some of that simplifying stuff is really just, you know, yeah, I kind of want to only know what the three objects that I can deal with are, instead of having to pick through every single piece of detritus.
But the beauty of the human brain is that you're going to look at that world, and you're going to, when everything is interactable, you're going to make those decisions without even thinking about it. Because you do that every day. Every day when you walk into 7-Eleven, process all these decisions.
If you walk into 7-Eleven,
you don't pick up everything. You don't go into 7-Eleven and like pull every damn beer out of the cooler before buying one. You go over there, you're like, oh, here's what they got. That's what I want.
Have you ever been in a scavenger hunt a lot of people throw sort of mini Amazing Race type things.
Sure, okay.
Sometimes those are just completely overwhelming because you literally there's no framework. There's no
boundary.
You're
looking for the needle in the haystack.
Exactly. So if I walked into digital 7-Eleven and needed to find my King's Quest item that's going to be the thing, and I could try the chewing gum on the thing, I could try the Dr. Pepper in the cabinet.
So you're still thinking in terms of it being an abstracted deal, and it would have to be right. It would not be like I'm trying to find the thing to work with my thing. It would be that, oh, my girlfriend has a stomach ache, I need to get her some Pepto-Bismol, and I walk in and find where the medical stuff is and buy a bottle of Pepto-Bismol.
It's just level design. Like Left 4 Dead pointed to, there's actually a great developer diary about how they did level design to lead you towards light, essentially, and you always feel like you could go a million different ways, but there's only one way. And they did a great one with Portal also, where it's like you feel like you're figuring it out, but there's really only one solution. Or versus BioShock Infinite, a fun game, you should experience it. But like you push up on the D-pad and it points you the where to go, because those levels don't really give you level design, in my opinion, don't inform your decision.
It's sort of the perfect dark.
And what's what every it's what everybody complains about with what was the game that you sort of the Uncharted thing of where to climb
Enslaved?
Enslaved, right. Where it's like, oh, it's just glowing bits. It's like, well, yeah, but if it was literally just
figure out how to climb.
No, I know. I did too. I liked it a lot. We talked about it. Anyway, but what I'm saying is what people complained about with that game
was that it was too push button, like you knew where to go.
You saw the glowing path of where to climb, and sometimes with Uncharted it can be that way as well. I actually think Tomb Raider nailed that. I always knew white was where I needed to go, but it never stuck out like a sore thumb. Side note. But in absence of that, where it's just sort of like a wall to climb, where would you, I think some of those things can be overwhelming to a player, and it's all about...
You know what? We're so far the other end of the way that I am ready and willing to tell designers, overwhelm me.
You are screaming from the mountaintops right now. And I'm sure everybody listening to this is thinking at the same time is Dark Souls, Monster Hunter. These are the experiences that people are grasping onto because of that exact thing. Yeah. It's like we're throwing you into these systems and we're not holding your hand anymore, and you have to sort of survive in it and figure it all out and use. And I, for one, sometimes shy away from that stuff because I feel like I just, I want to be comfortable in the systems and then explore the world.
There's comfort in structure.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's great that as gamers we have so much choice, that we have the Dark Souls, we have the Uncharted, we have the BioShocks, and I feel like a lot of the critical discussion and intellectual debates we've been having about, is game design too simplistic? I feel like it's a little short-sighted, because I do think that with all the different kinds of games that are out there,
I hope no one will misinterpret me as saying it's simplistic. I just think there's room to go double.
There's definitely room.
I want that shit too. I want that shit. There's very little shooting in that book, and he's playing world's best video game.
It's awesome.
He's figuring shit out and like exploring stuff, and it's awesome.
I totally want that. All right, it's a good thing we didn't have a sponsor this week, since we're like just like rolling. So I had a good first segment. See, I came back from the boat like mentally recharged. Stick around. We still have a lot of stuff to talk about. We have Star Trek to talk about. We have Monaco to talk about. Christian and Andrew and Jeff have their segments coming up. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, we are back and ready to roll on. I'm going to turn the reins over to Christian to see what he's been up to.
Well, first I just want to say that I was at a Starbucks and I saw someone entering that code into the computer. I said, oh, you listened to Weekend Confirmed. And they said, no, a friend told him about the offer. And I said, do you not listen to Jeff Cannata? It is only for Weekend Confirmers. And I took his laptop and I broke it because I was like,
that.
At least listen to the episode. If you're going to use
that.
So anyway, I got your back, Jeff.
I'm going to re-record that. Don't worry about it, everybody. I know.
However, do send him a Twitter about how outdated it sounds now.
That's the recording? I thought...
Every week.
I thought
exact,
you say that
I'm
every
money.
Week.
And I still talk about Hitman and whatever the other game is.
You didn't even play Hitman, did you?
No. I didn't say that I played it in the ad.
But you didn't even play it, did you?
No.
I didn't think you did.
I'm not a Hitman fan.
I'm not a Hitman.
He's not a hit fan. No.
So what I wanted to talk about, and I can certainly lead this and start with things that I'm excited about, but I know last time I was on, and I tweet snarky stuff, and I sometimes am cynical and other things where I talk about video games. I think it's easy to say things that are to poke holes at things and to be upset with things and say, here's why Bioshock Infinite is bad. And you know, I could argue that a lot about what I didn't like about Bioshock Infinite. But I also think that as we're coming to a close of a generation and getting ready for this new generation, I think there's a time where you can look back at things that you were really excited about and things that you're going to be excited about. So for me, the thing that really hit me now is I really, really, really want a 3DS, which I never thought that would happen. Like I was never like ignoring the possibility.
What made you want it?
Mario Golf, New Zelda.
That's what I played, by the way.
That's all. I
want to hear about that. Fuck right now. But like, also, like, what? And so, in looking back on this generation, it's so easy to poo-poo in this internet age. But like, we got Uncharted, Gears of War, BioShock, and like all these great things that I feel like, holy shit, this is awesome. And there's a lot more awesome to come. And so, like, for me, the thing that really pushed me over the edge is, like, yeah, I want – and I was at Target, and I almost bought Injustice, which I didn't because I learned my lesson fighting games. I'm going to buy it 2 months from now when it's cheaper and has all the characters because I'm not going to play online. But I had the 3DS XL in my hand, and I was like, I want this so bad, but the games aren't quite out yet. But it was like, I could get Luigi, which I
want
to play.
I want that XL, too.
And 3D Land, which I've played but loved, and, like – Nintendo is, and Animal Crossing. You guys talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
I love Animal. It's so stupid. I don't mean to dismiss it, but it's such a great time waster. Like, yeah. I just open it up and play it and squish some bugs and check
and the
some
new,
mail.
The new one really lets you do so many amazing things.
Are you being sarcastic?
No,
I'm talking about
no.
being genuinely excited,
no,
Andrew Yoon.
Yeah, I think the great example is, all right, let's say you the new Animal Crossing, let's say you only play Animal Crossing at night, and usually that meant that all the stores would be closed.
Yeah.
But because you're the mayor in that game, you can actually create an issue that dictates that, no, stores must be open at night.
Take that shit, Tom Nook.
I'm getting that bundle. That's what I'm going to do when that bundle comes out. And so, yeah, like Zelda.
That's cool because
you know, sometimes you just play, can only play at night.
Exactly.
And you had to go in and game the calendar. It was the other way to do it. It was like trick your system or whatever. So I think it'd be fun because listening to last week's episode, like Dan really makes me want to play Monster Hunter and Darks. Like his enthusiasm for that is infectious. And I've tried them and then I'm like, fuck.
So Dan got on the Monster Hunter. I haven't had a chance to listen because I just got back.
Yeah, he went straight from Dark Souls to Monster Hunter.
And has he twisted your arm to play it yet?
Oh, yeah. My arm is. Did you not see how twisted it is?
And are you playing it?
I am playing it. I have not found quite the love that Dan has for it. I'm trying to find the love.
But see, I think that's great. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. Like getting excited about it and trying it and then being like, this isn't for me and quitting it. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Right. Like, if you love Crysis 3 and that's what you're excited about, you know, dive in. Like, I don't know why. Like, I'm going back to God of War Ascension because I love the God of War games. It's like a guilty pleasure for me. I really, really like it.
Does it feel less than?
No. I know what I'm getting into. You know what I mean?
What does that mean?
I'm not in it for the story. I'm not. Oh, who betrays Kratos this time? Who?
Why is he so angry?
Yeah, it's like I know what I'm getting into. The graphics are
gorgeous.
You've
never played it for that, right? You've never played any of the God of Wars for like, what's Kratos gonna do next?
Exactly. In this game, I feel like it has everything. It's been long enough since I've played a God of War that I enjoy going through and killing elephants, ripping their brains out, and it's really gory and over the top. So I like it, and I'm excited about it. But
what elephant ever do to you?
So much, dude. Two of them came at me at once. And I was like, I'm just trying to get the secrets chest so I can get this eye. So
and a circle appeared over one of their heads, and you're like, whatever. Oh, ripping their fucking brains out.
That's the only way to answer it, because I get health orbs every time I kill an elephant that way.
Yeah.
And it's fun and exciting.
That's a compelling argument.
Yeah. But so, no, you got to play Zelda. I've watched Sessler's hands-on.
Screw you, old paradigms of gaming. I get health orbs.
But that's what I'm... That they can all exist,
I'm
right?
Not,
like
I'm not
I find that you're just being a dick.
No, I was just...
You love hating things that I love.
I do.
Is what you love, Mr. Kanata. I try to come in here and bring some positivity.
He's all going Jackie Treehorn on his pad over here already. He's like...
Be excited about something, and then I hear that
I
got to play a game I want to play. Because don't get me wrong, this segment, I could just sit here and talk shit about Bioshock Infinite.
Because you hated it.
Especially because it's not
on the 3DS.
Wait, how could you sit here and talk shit? It's your segment. You want to talk shit on it, that's fine. You can endure the wrath
of
the internet.
He wants to. He's
but
like,
why
he
do
did this whole preamble just to like set up this fucking swerve right here.
Gotcha, mother.
He's like, guys, I am the happiest go. Like, I like Nintendo. People love Nintendo, right? I love Nintendo. Oh, by the way, Bioshock Infinite sucks.
So I'll do a little bit of Bioshock, but then I need to hear, that's our trade, Andrew. I'm going to save some of this, and I want to hear Zelda hands-on from
you. All right.
So I am going to do my best not to do any Bioshock Infinite story spoilers in this discussion. The world is very rich and detailed, and there's cool stuff. You look at a painting, it informs something. A plaque informs something. You can get all of this stuff from the audio files left around. But the way the story unfolds, I feel like that world and setting is pointless. That it's a very basic story when it comes down to it. And
we need
it could have
Madison here for this.
It could have been any other first setting. It could have been any world. I love what I was going to say, Ken. Like I know him. I love what Mr. Levine. I love what Irrational Games did in terms of world building by having this rich world. But I feel like I tweeted it out by like having this is in the first hour of the game. Even less than that. There's racism and religion and stuff like that prominently featured in the first part of this game. And to me, I feel like that's the movie equivalent of an Oscar bait movie, where it's like, look how adult this is. This is so cool. Blah, blah, blah. But it's, in my opinion, pointless in terms of serving the story that they're telling. It's cool. And
I would agree with
world.
You that it certainly becomes pointless. And I think maybe that was one of my disappointments that I didn't articulate well, is that like they introduce those things, as you put in a Oscar bait derogatorily way. But I thought it was intellectually stimulating that they were going to like bring those elements in, and then they sort of get complete. Well, not sort of. They get completely tabled. It's like, here's all this. We're not actually dealing with any of that stuff. We just brought it in to give you a little flavor.
To tickle your fancy. And Jeff, I know you love the skyline portions of the combat, but I feel like for a cities that are connected by these intricate skylines, the only skylines you get to ride on are circles around combat areas. It's like, oh, you can go here. Like the trailers were like, jump on this and jump down and do this and do that. What you really do is you jump on, you go around the circle, you jump off, you jump on, you go around the circle.
It's true that they are nested circles in a couple of places, but here's the question, Spicer. I mean, within the within the context of the game, given like the reality of designing levels, would you give up the awesomeness of Skyline Combat just because, well, we can't connect 35 little city blocks together?
I would have rather had that story told in a Walking Dead Telltale style game.
I don't know about that.
I thought the combat is the combat's not as smooth as Call of Duty or Halo.
Let me just address the Skyline thing real quick, because that's not how I played it. I didn't just leap on and go in a circle and jump down. I would jump up, change direction mid-go, go back and forth, leap down, kill a dude, leap back up.
Hope a dude hops on the line so you can kick
him.
That was
some of the most
awesome fun
parts, is when some guy would be on the line and I would knock him off the line.
The best.
Or I'd leap toward him and hit him. Amazing.
So I guess here's where one big difference in opinion lies, is that to me, yes, I felt the arena effect every time they used the Skyline Combat.
Sure.
But I was enjoying the Skyline Combat so much that I was like, and I thought they were excellent arenas. As a matter of fact, I think it's the very last.
Yeah,
especially.
Me too.
I thought the
really?
Very last one that's like got three layers and you're going through buildings on Skylines, and there's other ones that take you up over roofs, and there's like different vantage points. I thought those were really well planned out.
See, I guess it's the way that I was min-maxing and playing a game where I played some on hard, and then I got towards the end and dumbed it down because I was like, oh, I'm not having fun. I just want to beat this thing. That I would find a defensive position, set up my vigor traps, and then just sit there and kill people. So it's like I was probably playing it unfun.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could have been doing something else, but I was like, this is effective. This wins. I'm beating the game this way.
The game did let you do that. And I will say that there were a couple places I was playing on hard where I did game the game and found, for instance, one of the stupid ghost fights, I found a spot where I could literally game the game, and it was the only way I would ever beat in the fight, because the fight was ridiculous.
Tread lightly, is in spoiler territory.
But I found this part where I could game the game, and using sniper rifle and a couple of good techniques to build up powers that I needed, I could eventually conquer the battle by attrition.
That's one of the knocks you could say against the game, is that there is such variety available in the vigor gun combinations, and there's no incentive to try anything other than the first thing you try that you happen to like. There's nothing forces you to change things up. There's no.
Do you want to be forced though? Because you're having
not
fun.
Not necessarily.
With it.
But you can get through the game using, using just one thing if you want. And I suppose it's on you to experiment, but it would be nice if there was some sort, if there really was true variety.
So you want more rock, paper, scissors out of the enemies.
I don't know if I want that. I'm just saying that I think that that's, for all the wonderful variety that there is and all the different kind of leveling up of stuff that you can do, there's really no need to, and there's no real reason to.
Well, I think this game suffers from, one, lofty expectations and early praise, and two, how awesome a lot of the things that it does are so awesome that then when things are disappointing, they're like we talked about in the first segment, they're more glaring. Whereas, and it's also about personal taste. I really, really, really enjoy the combat in God of War. I prefer it over Devil May Cry, like that type of action game. I know it's first-person shooter versus an action game, but the God of War type of action, I really enjoy, and I love the scope of it. And like that's why I'm saying this goes back to, I guess, being excited, is it's fine if you love Bioshock Infinite more than me. That's awesome. I'm super happy for you. And it's
this
fine
is the
if you
internet.
Hate,
we hate you now.
If you hate God of War and it's trite and overblown, whatever. But like to me,
so what
I
you're
know
saying is you have to choose
system.
Either God of War or Bioshock Infinite, and
or,
never the but, twain shall meet.
Now, let me ask you. Let me
they
ask you a real question.
With GoldenEye, so it doesn't really matter when it comes to it.
What's your take, Bioshock to Bioshock Infinite?
Bioshock 1 is a significant, not head and shoulder, but it's a better game.
I agree.
Than Bioshock Infinite. Better world building, better story.
I wish Aria was here because I have had a couple of long, we've had really long game discussions because she's a Bioshock Infinite champion over Bioshock, and I'm a little bit Bioshock over Infinite, but I like both of them a lot.
I like both of them a lot too. It's interesting though, because the last time I think you and I spoke about it, you hadn't finished it, and I think you would agree that the second half of the game,
it doesn't
kind of
It
tarnishes your view.
Well,
we did our
spoiler cast.
Oh, we did our spoiler cast.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I mean,
you know exactly my opinion on the last third of the game.
Yeah. I don't want to dive into. I think you should play it. I think it's worth experiencing.
Oh, yeah.
For sure, and spend the time. And
it's one of the great video game I think experiences, and it will make you have an opinion of it. It's a game that forces you to have an opinion of it.
That's what I commend about. Like God of War, I will not be talking about after I finish, except to say,
except
do you like killing
constantly.
Shit?
go play God of War. It's awesome, but you don't have these discussions where you break it down, because BioShock, they do have these lofty goals, and that's the critique, is like, wow, if they could have pulled off what I personally wanted it to be, holy shit.
So there's
what
a big
they
piece,
did was
another
great.
Big piece you just brought in there, and I think that for some reason the BioShock games really pull this out, what I wanted it to be. And I think that we, after BioShock, which was a really personal experience, and I don't know how much BioShock 2 suffered from this, but especially Infinite seems to have brought out from a lot of people their personal expectations of what they hoped and dreamed it would be. And that's a really hard thing to measure up to, because sure. If it hits, that's great. But if it doesn't, you're like, well, that's not what I had in my dreams.
Yeah.
That's not what I thought Songbird was going to be.
Which right. is why Link
well,
to the Past
Well, it's also not what
two.
They showed.
I was gonna
it's not what they showed Songbird. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying.
I was going to circle back to that right now, which is what I think is great about gaming now, is that there are people like, oh my God, too many games come out. There's no way I can play them all. That's kind of cool, because now you can play the games that you love. And so, like, when I saw Link to the Past 2 or whatever they end up calling it, I loved, and still love, I haven't played it in years, but I loved Link to the Past. And the last Zelda I beat after that was Wind Waker. I haven't finished any of the subsequent Zeldas, but Link to the Past, I could sit down on Virtual Console and just play in that world, and it's so much fun. So then I saw a new one, and Animal Crossing, and Mario Golf, and all that stuff. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do the 3DS. So tell me that those that feeling of excitement and joy is legit.
Well, I think the problem with a game like Link to the Past is that it's so beloved by fans and so well-regarded that I do think that maybe people's dream and vision of Link to the Past 2 will maybe be much greater than what the game actually ends up being. It's hard to tell because obviously it's way too early. But I had fun with it, but I also wasn't. I also. But
there's a big butt. You're saying a lot of little butts, but I can tell you have a big butt hanging out here. You're waiting just to crush my dreams. Crush him.
He's got
okay.
a donkey butt waiting back there.
Crush his dreams.
I can
with
take
your big
it.
Butt.
I can no, take no, it. I'll go back to being sour and hateful. I had a good day on Twitter, you guys. I had a really good day on Twitter.
It's not a big butt, I think, especially because it's way too early. And I think that's an entirely different discussion about how great it is that Nintendo's actually being very forthcoming about their titles. But I think for me, yeah, Link to the Past was this sort of untouchable game, and so to bring a direct sequel to it, it's sort of weird, especially because now you have these expectations and the game is actually quite different than Link to the Past originally was.
How so? Because I mean, I feel like Link to the Past, what makes it so great now is that, like, our conversation in the first segment is just solid mechanics. And there's a cool story in exploring these dungeons, but it's like everything clicks so well and doesn't suffer, in my opinion, from, like, the water temple.
So, yeah, that's the thing. I don't feel like it really clicked, and it could be because they just throw you in the middle of the game, and it's like, here, a dungeon. You have no idea what
now you're a wall painting. Go around the corner.
Exactly. The wall painting thing was very jarring. It just didn't... It didn't really jive with the rest of your abilities. Like, all of a sudden, you're stuck to the wall in your 2D image, and you can go around the 3D environment stuck to the wall. And
spoilers!
But you toggle that, right?
So the way you activate it is you move Link to the wall and then press A and he'll stick to the wall. And there's like in the original Link to the Past, you have like a MP, a magic gauge, so that'll deplete. You don't have items anymore, so every time you shoot an arrow or you use a bomb or you use an ability,
it
depletes that and it'll regenerate.
How did I not know that?
Well, and that was in the original Link to the Past.
You had items.
The items depleted.
Oh, sure. Okay,
gotcha.
Right, yeah,
so
gotcha.
It's just all it's all a unified.
It's a use bar.
MP. Yeah.
Right. Gotcha.
And so you have all the Zelda mainstays, but for some reason that drawing thing just didn't. It really didn't. The puzzles that were that center around it are really clever. And actually, it took me a while to beat that dungeon that they gave us to try, just because I just kept on forgetting about that ability. It's like, man, how do I get outside to? Oh, I have to get on top of this switch. You know, hit it with an arrow. Go
see,
elevate
I think that's
myself.
Cool. Because it's like a new puzzle mechanic that Zelda gets to use in their dungeons. Because I know they talked about, you know, for the Wii U Zelda, that we're rethinking Zelda. Mm-hmm. And this game isn't doing that in entirety. But it's adding, for so many Zeldas, it was you go to the bomb temple, you go to the arrow temple, you go to the boomerang temple, and that you get the item and you do the thing. And maybe this game is the same way, but I feel like the way they're presenting it, what has me excited is that you have this ability, and it's kind of a new wrinkle or layer into solving these...
Yeah, no,
dungeons that's on top of everything else.
Definitely, and And the dungeon that we played, it's massive. It's 16 floors high, which makes you completely...
Because they're very vertical, right?
And exactly.
In terms of... And not broad and horizontal, like...
Exactly. So it sort of makes you appreciate 2D dungeon design, because we haven't seen that in a really long time. We're so familiar with the 3D Zelda tropes that it's actually really refreshing to have a return to the 2D mechanics. And the great thing about doing a 2D quote-unquote Zelda is that it makes the 3D look really good. I feel like Nintendo is still the only developer that's really thought of how do we use the 3D of the 3DS and like make you actually want to turn it on. And actually, pretty much every game that I played at the Nintendo event, I found myself wanting to max out the 3D slider. And
that's how I felt with Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah,
too.
Luigi's Mansion looks terrific in 3D.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong Country.
But they were all, let me just from a hardware standpoint, mm-hmm. every time on the XLs, right?
They were all on the XL.
I feel
yeah.
like that's all they're pushing.
I want that. I want that so bad.
So I want the bundle. The other reason I'm not going to buy it is E3 is so close. I don't think there will be a redesign, but like...
Who knows?
They're a pretty good deal right now. You can get an XL for 160 or whatever, you know, Target or whatever special.
Well, that happened many weeks ago. You missed that deal.
But I'm saying, but I will be back. I'm saying
hopefully,
it's not uncommon
yeah.
to see this.
Yeah.
And then you buy Luigi and then Nintendo's giving you a free 3D. I feel like they're really doubling down that maybe I'm just being a sucker and waiting, but I'm
and
like...
It makes me nervous because I haven't really played on the XL, but you know, I really found the 3D on the original 3DS distracting and annoying and looking like looking into a little 3D postage stamp or a 3D Topps card.
I do think that the problem with the 3D on the original 3DS isn't the hardware. It's actually the software, I think.
You think?
I think...
Okay.
Because the games just really use 3D in very gimmicky ways, but didn't mm-hmm. really add to the gameplay experience. But then you play something like Mario 3D Land, and that's actually a game where it's like, wow, I really want to turn the 3D on. In fact... You sort of can't play it without the 3D on.
I mean, I just think like the size increase of the screens makes such a difference. DSi XL, and I'm like so happy because it's so much.
The XL
better.
Really is a better system, bar none. It feels better in the hand, and actually, it in spite of the screens being much much bigger, the system isn't that much bulkier, which is a problem with the DSi XL. Like the screens are a lot bigger, but. You felt like you were carrying a book around, you know?
But, I mean, this opens the whole discussion about handheld, which to me, you know, and having just been on this vacation, I still didn't find myself playing handheld that much because the handheld game consoles still make games that want longer term, as a general rule of play, want a longer play session time than what I really... think of as what I've conditioned myself. Maybe it's conditioning,
but they're combating that. I think it's both ways. I understand that perception.
I would love for them to go the direction that I see some mobile developers going now of high learning curve, high, you know, real games like serious core gamer games, but where the design is about a session length of 4 or 5 minutes. Like where you can still like you can play 4 or 5 minutes, have a great time, and it's not a casual game, it's not a simple game. You still are investing, like I have to learn the systems, I have to learn to play the game.
I mean, once again, I don't think it should be a either or thing. I think I'm obviously, yeah, you want those games you can play on the toilet, you want those, you know, longer form games, and I think I don't think designers necessarily have to make more bite-sized, quote-unquote, experiences for the handheld?
I think it would really help because I think the thing is that when I'm playing handheld, I am in varying states of commitment to my game. And if it's a serious game that requires all of my attention, then dipping in for a couple of minutes and dipping out is the way I'm doing. Even if I sit down, let's say I sat down to play, we'll completely take it out of Nintendo's hands. So let's say I sit down to play a Vita game. Even if I'm sitting down to play a Vita game, if I'm not playing on my home television and console, then whatever environment I'm in is probably not as distraction-free as it would be if I was settling into play. So I'd like to have an ability to like be focused and play for a minute and then look up, do whatever else it was,
well,
and then come back to the game.
Vita and 3DS both handle that with, you know, pause.
With pause. And pause is not effective.
I think it's like I'm playing through Metal Gear Solid 2 HD Collection. I never finished it before on PS2, and I'm... Not to the new stuff yet, but I'm really enjoying it, and I found the save state thing to be great. Like, I was in New York, and then I was in San Francisco last weekend, and I've been playing a lot, and I'm in the middle of a cutscene in the plane, and it's like, okay, put it in the save state, whatever. I think what they could add to it is every mobile game should have a save anywhere feature. so that I could literally, I'm playing Metal Gear
every
in the middle of it.
Every game should have a save anywhere feature.
Probably, but then you could game the game and just save debt. But I guess that's up to you to ruin the experience like I did for my BioShock experience, arguably.
Have you played any?
Hold on, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
So like, I could save Metal Gear. Like, I'm playing Metal Gear and like, this is awesome on the plane and I don't want to lose that moment where I am, but then like, oh, now I want to play some pinball. I should be like Zen Pinball. Oh, so good. I should be able to just save Metal Gear and quit that app
and go into Zen Pinball. Greatest thing about PSP Go, actually.
Could you do that?
I'm actually saying something good about the PSP Go right now. PSP Go, you could have a game, you can suspend it, and then launch another game.
That's great.
And then resume the game that you suspended, which is the greatest thing ever, and every console should do that.
What are you saying, Jeff? I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm just curious if you played any Guacamelee on your Vita.
I have not.
I recommend it.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it.
Very fun.
I have not. So,
well worth the download.
To maybe take it home. So those are, like, I'm excited about the 3DS. Is there anything?
Everyone should be excited about the 3DS. The 3DS has been a great system for, I think, a very long time. I know it had that really bad wave of negative press in the first 6 months. But
it was shitty. It wasn't worth buying unless it was the game you wanted.
Yeah, it was $250 when it launched. Didn't have games. It had ports, and the 3D was bad. But now you have games that have amazing 3D and just great games with or without the 3D. So there's new Mario and Luigi game that's coming out.
Yeah,
amazing.
New Time Travelers or whatever they're calling
it's,
it.
Dreamy Time.
Dream Team, I think. That's
Dreamy.
Dream something?
With Dreamy Luigi.
Yeah.
Really?
Super Dreamy.
Starring so McDreamy. Good.
So real quick,
McDreamy.
Anything else that you guys, so we can leave this positive. I'm not sorry. I have problems with BioShock. Deal with it.
You know the real sadness about BioShock for me?
That you told my wife to buy it for me, and then she did.
Instead of
Tomb Raider.
And she ruined your week?
I enjoy it. That was really nice of you.
I did tell her that.
You should have told her a better game.
It's funny that you say that. It's funny that you say that before what I was about to say, which is that I really think it overshadowed Tomb Raider, unfortunately. And as much as I really love BioShock Infinite, which I do love it, I would, if I had to award Game of the Year right now, it would go to Tomb Raider.
Wow. That right there is something for you to think about while we take a break at the middle of the show. We'll be right back with more Weekend Confirmed. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
You see, Jeff, you think your ad was bad, but remember, like, sometimes Dave would drop the old Gamefly app
Palm mobile.
That had the Palm mobile device. I'd be like, dude, why'd you, that's the old tape. Why'd you run the old tape?
Your Newton devices.
Hey, the Palm Pre, still one of the greatest phones ever.
Okay, so that's a guy that has a Galaxy S2, you guys. Oh,
yeah.
You're too stylish for an S2. You got to upgrade your wardrobe to match, I mean, your phone to match your wardrobe.
I refuse to buy into the yearly upgrade cycle of phones.
You have hype armor.
I don't know. It runs every app, and like I don't.
So we can run it better, bigger, faster, stronger.
I'm so close to going Android.
I mean,
I don't hate a lot of things. I hate in iTunes with the fury of a thousand suns. I think that is one of the worst pieces of software.
What do you
ever
still use
hoisted
it for?
Upon.
Why do you hate iTunes?
Because the only fucking way to interface with my phone. How the fuck am I supposed to get shit onto my phone?
Spotify, Dropbox.
No, not music.
Then what? What? Music and movies is all iTunes is for.
I don't want to buy shit through iTunes.
You don't have to.
I want to use my... I don't want to get into it.
You want to use it off the phone, not have to sync.
I don't... Why would I sync?
Oh, God, I think he's going to fall down.
I hate that.
Where did this come from?
Why? Because I just dealt with this like literally two nights ago. Okay. Why would there ever be? Why would there ever be a time when I want to see a message from any piece of software that says, in order to do that, we need to erase everything on your phone?
Why did it
never do that? There's never a situation where I would want to do that.
I've not ever seen that.
You haven't?
Message.
You haven't clicked on any a sync on a new computer or a different computer? I use a lot of different computers because I'm always on. I'm always getting new things.
But just turn on Cloud Sync and then...
Fuck that! I gotta pay money for Cloud Sync?
No, you don't.
Every time I plug my phone in, it says, Cloud Sync's out of room, dude. Sorry, Cloud Sync's out of room. So I gotta. They want me to pay more money.
Clear old backups. That they're old backups that are taking up space, and you can clear out all but your most recent. I understand there are problems.
The worst piece of software.
I want you to go to Android because I think Android does a lot right, but I can't wait for those frustrations.
Oh, there's different frustrations?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, totally different frustrations.
That's why I'm done.
So it's a,
Where do you clear old download backups on iCloud?
You have to go into iTunes.
But
wait, iTunes?
Yeah, fuck that. A. B. Isn't it inherently a problem that I have more storage space on my phone than I have in iCloud without paying money?
No, because it's not backing up. It's just the data, not necessarily
everything. It's my pictures.
Sure.
Which is the majority of the shit that I have on my phone. So if I have more phone data on my more picture data on my phone than there is in my
get Dropbox.
No.
And then Dropbox will automatically pull all your picture albums and you won't have to sync them on iTunes.
I don't want
to. I think he's not.
BlackBerry 10. I have a friend.
Windows Phone 8.
Yeah, Windows Phone.
Dude, Windows Phone 8.
Yeah, with iDrive.
No, here's what I don't want. I am an old school guy. I don't want anything to do anything automatically. Don't do it. I want to do it. Let me do it. I will fucking do it. Let me do it. Don't do it for me. Don't pick up my phone. I'm like, what? Where the fuck did that shit go?
I just love the idea of like, you want to back up your phone? It's like, yes. And then like Jeff sitting there writing down. Call Andrew 10:22.
Goddamn right.
PM.
Give me the MS-DOS prompt.
They all have problems. I think a battery glitch drain in mine. And they're like, well, just go restart it as a new phone and don't restore from backup. And I'm like, what do I lose? Like, oh, you'll lose your contacts and your notes.
Yeah, so everything that I want. What? Why would I lose?
Well, on Android,
why
you
lose
your contacts?
Anything?
Because of Google contracts. Yeah. But Android has, anyway.
Why is there ever a message that says, in order to sync to this computer, we need to erase your phone? Really?
Because it's straight out of the 80s, blood. No, I can't.
You know what? I tell you this, I miss my Android phone, but I like things about my iPhone, so.
No,
all technology is great and terrible. All right, so that's
just like the powerful Oz.
That is the conclusion. Though. All right, so do we want to talk about Blood Dragon?
Yes.
Or the Bureau.
Forget the give us the thumbnail on the Bureau because I want to talk about Blood Dragon.
So should I start with the Bureau? Okay, the Bureau is the XCOM shooter that everyone forgot. It's back.
It's coming out in August.
In August. It's current gen systems.
It's being cast into the desert.
It's coming out in August. It'll be $20 August
20th. No, it's actually a full retail game.
Oh, not August 20th, it won't be.
Wait. We're being very cynical about it.
Positive.
Did it look good? Did it look all right?
I mean, it's interesting. I'll be getting hands-on time soon, so I'll have a better impression of it.
Because every time I've seen
it has a situation room.
I've seen it like three E3s now in a row. And each time the presentation has been vastly different. But...
And it's very different now.
And each time I was like, oh, there's something cool about this.
So,
think of it as this: you're going to Fashion Week in New York every year and you're getting a different, you know, runway show.
That's how I'll think
now,
about it.
Now it's not even a first person shooter anymore.
What?
It's a third person
well, of course it
cover.
It's an RTS. Have you not played it?
It's a tactical third person cover shooter.
Can you tell me about the metagame?
Is that cool? Is it cool?
And it's now They're positioning it as the prequel to XCOM: Enemy Unknown. So it's like,
I love how now that was going to be the shitty side version, and the FPS was going to be the moneymaker, and it's like, oh, people actually like the XCOM.
I have no idea how they're going to make any of their money back on.
They're
this,
not,
though.
But they're going to release it and take the there's so much stuff in this, they'll make some money back, and then the rest is a lot.
Wait. So you saw nothing redeeming about it?
No. I can't say one way or another because I'm just surprised that it exists.
Did it give you a good impression?
I'm excited as an XCOM fan because okay. I think that world is interesting and I think
it's super interesting
and I think have a tactical shooter I like Valkyria Chronicles, so I feel like somehow that's gonna translate into XCOM.
That's a stretch. That right there was a stretch. I mean,
I'm
that was
a hard time figuring out.
That was a monumental
stretch.
Anyway,
words trying are to coming say out nice of your things, mouth.
But no, it doesn't look that good. But his opinion might change after he does hands on.
That's it. No, I mean, I don't have an opinion of it one way or another yet. But I'm just saying that is a game that is coming out.
However, oh, XCOM Enemy Unknown coming to tablets,
which is great.
I think that's such a great idea.
So cool.
I
can't wait to see how they pull that shit off.
I can't wait to see how angry people get when they charge like $20 or $30 for that game on iOS.
I know, right? It's a $60 game.
Yeah, and people are going to be like, "What the fuck is this shit? You know, why isn't it 99 cents?"
Well, if they're smart, and by smart I mean evil, they'll make it free to play and microtransaction it. There's so many things you could micro. I could come up with microtransaction plans for that.
Yeah,
game
but
all day
you're
long.
You're one of them now. You're
you are one of them.
You
are.
Work for the man,
the guys. And don't tell Garnet anything.
It's like. Oh yeah, and I was at a conference and someone from Activision was talking and just like yeah you know we're all about the MTX now, and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? What does MTX mean?
Money times X, where X equals people
more
paying
money.
Shit.
I don't think I've heard MTX.
It's just microtransactions. Apparently, that's the new acronym.
Microtransaction being transaction.
Yeah.
Huh. Microtransactions.
What about the MTX?
That's like, isn't that old ATX Fury game?
Yeah, like
we're all about the dark poo-poo.
The ROI on the IAPs of the MTX. It's just, I hate. Your job sucks.
He was about to say I hate you. Right? That's like that's what that
he
was.
Pulled
gonna,
back from the brink
he has
of
no feelings about
you.
XCOM, the first person shooter,
yeah, exactly.
But he hates.
He can't form an opinion about a game he saw. But the guys.
Well, let me tell you this.
From it.
My job goes from. My job goes from very very high highs of doing design and creative to very low lows of trying to figure out how to be
make money
without being a shyster.
Yeah. So. I don't think they're going to make the shyster version of XCOM Enemy Unknown. Maybe they'll make a new shyster version from scratch. Anyway, Blood Dragon.
Yeah, that's what we want to hear about. Come on.
Blood Dragon is awesome. It's everything you
How
want
awesome
it to be.
How awesome is it?
Well, I think people are just really excited by the setting, and that's perfectly fine.
Hell yeah.
It's a great freaking, like, Far Cry 3, amazing. I'm going to get more of that in a cool new setting.
And I think it's actually a really brilliant strategy on Ubisoft's part because, hey, Far Cry 3 is a great game.
Yep.
If for some reason the jungle environment didn't really get to you or whatever, like, you can finally experience that gameplay in a completely new setting. And actually,
they should keep doing that. Just keep putting it in different settings. And you could have the Fashion Week runway setting for Garnet or, you know.
I like the idea of a smaller
It's cheaper for them to make, and I think...
Is it actually a smaller game, though? Is it?
It is much smaller. But, I mean, it's still a really... It's a pretty big game for a...
It's like the size of the one main of the first island, right? That's what I heard it described.
Yeah, like maybe a little bit smaller than that. But regardless, you know...
But does it have story beats and...
Yeah, it has story beats. Actually, the intro is...
Guitar riff, explosion,
story beat! It's so good because the cutscenes are told from this, like, NES 8-bit style... graphical style, and the voice acting is so bad. It
Michael Biehn doesn't deliver
in spades. It's just so good, and and I mean, just if you love that era, it's so clear that everyone that's involved with this project is really passionate about it. And I think brilliant thing about how they made that game is that they got a guy that had no involvement with Far Cry 3 to be the creative director of this game. They're just like, oh, okay, let's make DLC.
So he's like not attached to like, no, it needs to have tigers because that was my favorite. He's like, no,
exactly.
Do whatever you want with it.
I think he actually hasn't made a game before. This is
like the Homer Simpson car.
He's from the future.
No,
he used to have 8 pods and 16 wheels.
He was wearing a trench coat and no clothes.
He's definitely worked on games, but this is his baby. And... And it's really interesting to see Ubisoft put so much effort behind it, and faith in it. And the thing is, it's a no brainer because it doesn't cost that much, and it'll sell a whole lot more than if it's just hey, more islands on Far Cry 3. The response has been really amazing.
I wonder
amazing.
If you'll see a lot of copycats of this, where it'll sort of the game will come out and then there'll be the weird total conversion.
I mean, Ubisoft's you know had that King Washington DLC for Assassin's Creed 3.
Not really the same thing.
Not the same thing, but I think they're realizing that in order to really extend the value of a single player game, you can really just go bonkers and it'll.
But I mean, I could see. some you know, cool game come out. It exists for a few months. It does really, really well. And then the developers release the sort of comedic, you know, like I can imagine like a Gears of War, and then it's set in like present day in like a shopping mall, and they're all like wearing, you know, preppy clothes, and it's like, you know, Dom and Marcus in there. You could do like jokey versions mm-hmm. that I think people would be like, oh my God, I can't wait to. I mean, I guess a great, the closest we've had to this is sort of the zombie Red Dead Redemption.
Exactly.
You know, where it's like, it's just a sort of a jokey side version.
But the problem with zombie Red Dead Redemption is that you still needed the main game. What Blood right. Dragon does.
Not if you did it on disc.
Okay, well, you're still buying like a completely different thing, though.
Yeah.
But Blood Dragon is just a $15 thing, regardless of if you bought Far Cry 3 or not.
Very smart on their part.
Well, I think it's smart, yeah. too, because it gets mm-hmm. people in. Maybe you didn't finish the story of Far Cry 3, and for whatever reason, you loved the game, but you didn't finish it. You moved on to something else, and now this is like a new setting, but it's still the mechanics you like. And it's not like, well, I'm not going to buy that because I want to finish this game first. Like, you can go ahead and buy this because it's different and not related and play and know you're going to love it. Versus a lot of single-player DLC where it's, if you didn't finish the game, you're not going to buy the DLC. Mm-hmm. And I think this can get people reinterested.
I don't think there are many publishers, though, to come back to your thing, Jeff, who have the stones to do this. I mean,
really?
This was a ballsy-ass move by Ubisoft,
if it pushes
one.
Numbers, they yeah. will.
And, well, here's the problem. Here's my other concern is, if it pushes numbers, this is one of those things that, to me, is sort of, you know, a lightning strike.
Mm, and, maybe.
And trying to make it work with every other game, or any other game for that matter, where it doesn't have the catalyst of the dude who has this creative spark and says, walks in and like blows away the executive committee, says, I want to do this and it's gonna be fucking amazing, here's my sizzle reel, and it's like so good that like in 2 minutes the project's sold. You don't have that, then this doesn't work. You know?
I guess, but I mean, I'm even thinking back to Diablo and like the cow level, or in Diablo 3, the unicorn level. I think people, there's a fun joviality to those.
But I'd say the unicorn level feels forced as a copy of the cow level.
Maybe.
And I think that the challenge would be, if you want to find the way to do this again, not being forced, but doing your own thing.
I think the interesting thing about the Blood Dragon experiment is that if it takes off, Blood Dragon will become a franchise, like in and of itself,
I'm sure.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting approach to game development. You don't have to worry about the mechanics, because it really, I cannot emphasize this enough, it is Far Cry 3.
Well, how about this? If it takes off and it's successful at $15, maybe it could also take off and be successful and be a like mid-tier franchise. It could be the start of a mid-tier franchise into next generation.
Well,
we
I'm
all
pretty
want.
Sure it's going to be.
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
like
there's
going to
be a Blood Dragon 2. Yeah.
But it's contingent on the AAA big tier $60 franchise first.
We could keep cribbing off of engines. Like if they could keep cribbing off of engines and having like, you know, here's the foundation, here's all the team, here's all this stuff, and then make this size game around this character, not as big a scope, you know, different sort of art resources behind it.
I want to go back though to what you just said though. You said you can't overemphasize
Michael Biehn doing his voiceover.
You can't overemphasize this enough. It is Far Cry. Can you elaborate on that?
I mean, if you're expecting it to play any differently, like any differently, you will.
I mean, to the point of like the objectives are the same.
It has like outposts and all that.
Yeah, the gameplay is you taking over outposts. The Blood
Dragon.
You gotta
climb up to towers to get all that stuff.
The Blood Dragons. As awesome as they are, they really are incredible. Just when you see a Blood Dragon for the first time and it shoots fucking lasers out of its eyes, and it's wonderful. But the mechanic of like luring it over to an outpost and having it attack all the enemies inside, you know, you've done that in Far Cry 3. You know, running around the island, you've done that. In many ways it's a parody of Far Cry 3, but the mechanics are identical. The guns feel sort of the same, and it really is just a skin over Far Cry 3. So a part of me is a little dissatisfied because I just played Far Cry 3, so it does feel a little too familiar.
Well, that's why they gave it to you for $15.
Yeah, and
but it harkens back to the total conversion mod scene of the PC, right?
I mean, that's what I've been saying over and over.
Yeah, it's a professionally made total conversion mod made by, you know, Ubisoft, whatever.
And some games are really adapted to that. I mean, you could certainly, for instance, you could carve out a section of Skyrim and do something completely fantastical with it in a whole other direction, using everything about Skyrim as the underpinnings for it, right?
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing that's been happening on PC for a long time. So I don't know, though, about like making it a professionally produced and created under a publisher's banner game. I think that's why I said I think this is a lightning strike.
I don't know if it can be copied, but I think it's smart because I think no one is sitting here thinking, oh, well, they were making this when they were making the game or shortly thereafter to have it be coming out already. But no one, you don't hear people being angry about
it. Actually, they said they turned it on 6 months.
Oh, well, that's crazy.
Yeah, they started it before the game came out, yeah.
But they just started before it came out, but they turned it on a really short timetable.
Mm-hmm. But people aren't saying the argument like, oh, man, this should have been on the disc. Like, because I was thinking of like other examples of using an engine and peeling it off and like not spending too much money in reselling, whereas, you know, Halo 4, Spartan Ops was like a cool, new, unique thing. But I think had they sold that separately later as DLC, which they might do with a season 2 or whatever, but I think fans maybe would have been like, what is this? Or after Call of Duty doing a zombie mode, like you buy Black Ops 2, and then 6 months later, zombie mode comes out as $15. Mm-hmm. People would be like, well, no, that's part of it, but this doesn't feel like they took anything from you.
Yeah, I think it's important to prove or show the community, hey, we actually worked on this.
Well, it's different enough. I think that because the setting is so different, it doesn't feel like more Far Cry 3. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, here's a new Far Cry 3 island that, yeah, we were working on before, but it took us a little. It's like, no, this is, it's different setting, different whatever, and people aren't, you're not getting that fan outrage, which I think.
I think it will be more, that, I think Blood Dragon will be more exciting for people that haven't played Far Cry 3, though, just because, once again, the gameplay, as exciting as it was in the main game, you.
What did you play it on? Have they tuned anything up for console players?
Oh, I only played it on 360. So,
and did its frame rate and stuff seem the same as Far Cry 3?
I mean, I also played Far Cry 3 on 360.
So did it seem like a similar experience, a little bit of chug, but maybe playable?
I thought the 360 version looked great.
It looked great, but it would chug.
Looks better than Star Trek.
I'm not PC Master Race, here. So,
remember when people were excited about Star Trek two E3s ago?
This guy.
And they showed Divergent Paths.
Okay, so yeah, when the review copy came in.
Yes. Wait, you got one? Like, they actually sent a review copy?
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, should I send this out? He's like, oh, can I have it? Can I have it? I'm like, oh,
I was excited about
are you sure about that? Are you, like, okay.
So there's another story.
That was the best bullet you ever got.
I don't want to interrupt Andrew's flow.
Go for it, yeah.
So there's another story here about Star Trek, and I think we should talk about Star Trek, but the interesting story to me about Star Trek is where you started with that, which was 2 years ago at the pre-E3 Game Critics Awards tour. Like, Star Trek was, like, the bell of the ball. Everybody who saw it was hyped for it. They did a really strong vertical slice.
It was like Kirk and Spock going different ways, but like helping each other and
exactly. And it
falling in love.
And much like 1313, it looked, well, I'd say we never saw what 1313 the game looked like, but we know that what 1313 showed was like a hybrid of like stuff put together specifically to run and play and look fantastic. And I guess that's what they did with Star Trek as well, because what we got as a final result doesn't look like that.
I mean, every game demo,
every game demo does a vertical slice.
Yeah,
yes.
That isn't hands-on.
And then Taylor and Aliens, Colonial Marines, same
and
story.
Even Bioshock Infinite, let's not forget, they had that vertical slice. And how many years did it take for them to actually make a game out of it?
And very little of that is actually in the game.
CPD tweeted out like a picture. He's like, they really nailed the lens flare from Star Trek, and it's like a glitch where Kirk and Spock are one person with two heads, and there's a lens flare right in the middle of them.
So weird. Like, they have so many clipping problems in this game. It is.
Well, even more recently than that, Mattis and I last year, almost exactly a year ago, went to the Namco thing in Vegas, where Star Trek was really the centerpiece of what they showed. They didn't let anybody play it, and they showed a very controlled thing. And then we went into individual meetings in the room, and it was only concept art, and they had guys from the team there, and really their entire message was, you guys know how you feel about licensed video games? Well, we get that, and this is not that.
Worse.
Arguably. Yeah.
Well, the problem is that it feels exactly like what we all worry about with licensed video games, where it feels rushed. It feels incomplete.
I don't even think it feels rushed. It feels dated. It feels antiquated.
Which is really bizarre, considering it's been in development for so long. That's the really bizarre thing about Star Trek.
You played it on what?
I'm playing it on the 360 right now.
I'm playing it on PC.
It is visually ugly.
Yeah,
ugly. I wouldn't disagree with that. And I'm playing
the
on
character
PC on
models.
Mac,
so first of all, like they're the character models. It, look, even coming from a BioShock, but particularly coming from a Tomb Raider, this thing looks bad.
And if I was Zachary Quinto, I would be upset because it looks like Spock has a skin condition.
It's like it's weird. His skin is modeled.
It's strange.
Yeah. And but
it's like if I was Quinto,
okay,
I'd be like,
because you know what?
Obviously, why do I look like I have?
You've listened to the game. None of them gave a shit. Like that is the most amazingly poor voiceover work by professional actors I have ever heard in my life.
And all of those actors have done voice acting before. It's not like, oh my god, what is this microphone in front of me? What do I do with this?
Every actor has done voiceover because every movie requires.
There are drunken table reads that are better than that. It is Spock, go get the.
I don't know.
Maybe they're just piecing together like B-roll.
Really, you don't think so?
I think it comes more from the fact that nobody was in the same room at the same time. I think those guys were doing
insipid
doing
story.
Their,
I mean,
so what
doing
happened?
Best to make it,
what happened in the development of this game where guys were clearly excited about it? Like, at what point were they like, "Oh shit, this is the game we're gonna make"? And we got because I don't think just to lie to people. I mean, to some extent, yes, to sell a game, they're hyping it up and whatever. But I think
what happened is the Star Trek's coming out on May 17th. I think that's what happened.
But it's been in development for so. I mean,
it's been in development long enough.
Money?
I actually would have thought it was tracking to be earlier than this.
I think your story about how they had it as this big game at Vegas, and then Namco had a recent event in New York a month or two ago. Star Trek wasn't anywhere to be seen.
Well,
I think
to last year's E3.
I think somewhere along the way, someone at Namco's like, this game is not as good as we would hope it would. And they're just like, I guess we're just going to have to.
I mean, look, you spend this money on these great character actors, right? Or on the real characters actors, I should say. And not only is the VO work not great, but your engine doesn't support proper lip sync. All you have are wagging jaws. You have wagging jaws, which just completely destroys any suspension of disbelief. And it's an important thing because here's a game where it's supposed to be an interactive fiction at times, where you're all about the characters, where you're zoomed in close to these like character models, and you've got a waggy jaw while they're delivering lines.
But that's not even the worst part, man. I mean, it pains me to say, but the animation on the whole is.
Oh.
The just walking animation, they're gliding along the floor.
You like that in Too Human.
You did.
When I was controlling it. and all of the gameplay features really just feel borrowed from other things and slapped together. And
in a hodgepodge way.
And, you know, Justin from My Brother and Me podcast, which – I highly recommend if you guys aren't listening to.
Yeah, my brother is good.
It's great.
Good stuff.
He and I tried to play on Steam together, and this is a game that is entirely built around co-op. It is really Army of Two with a Star Trek skin. And we tried and tried and tried to get a game together and could not at any point.
Maybe the servers were overloaded because of the demand.
Could not at any point.
Have you reset your router?
I mean, literally, it would show, on my friends list, I would say invite to game, it would say loading game, and then it would say that game is no longer available. We tried and tried and tried, never got a co-op game, and literally the entire game is like, your co-op partner's doing this, you're got to do that, the co-op partner's doing this, you got to do that. It's really pretty frustrating and sad to see, because I think this, the promise of the game was really, really.
Oh,
high.
Andrew told the story true. I mean, I really was amped to play this because I thought the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot was phenomenal. One of my favorite sci-fi movies in the past 3 or 4 years. I'm really looking forward to the new movie. And the idea of like if it had even been moderately good, I was ready to like say, fuck yeah, hop in. And I guess if you are a super Star Trek fan, you still might find redeeming.
I mean, qualities
to play the game.
That licensed games have to do. They don't have to be innovative. They don't need to have great mechanics. They just have to be functional and like be fan service. You know,
yes.
That at the very least, that's what they need to do. And that's why I was really disappointed when I played it. That the voice acting was just so
Well, it's not, but you know what? It's not just the voice. It's not the voice acting. It's the dialogue. It's the prose. It's the story. The story is not even very good.
But that's the frustrating thing. Licensed games don't have to be great games. You know, they just have to be functional enough for.
They'd be Wolverine.
Literally,
yeah, exactly. I thought Wolverine Origins was awesome.
I
loved Wolverine Origins.
Why don't you love God of War? It's better in every way, but it's very functional.
Who said I didn't love God of War?
Because you love BioShock Infinite.
Who said I didn't
you
love
could
God
only
God
love
War?
One.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. There's only one of those.
But literally hundreds, and I bet actually maybe perhaps even thousands of episodes of Star Trek across all the various Star Trek properties. That this game does not have a good narrative to it is really unbelievable.
Granted, very few Star Trek episodes involve you taking cover and shooting hundreds of dudes. Really,
they tell you,
generally,
you should really use stun.
Generally,
you should really set your phaser to stun.
Set your phaser to stun.
These guys, they're not terrible.
Well, maybe that's the problem. I mean, maybe that's part of the problem.
It's
although,
not an action
although,
franchise,
look, I'll go back to Raven's Star Trek game, which we were fighting the Borg, and that was badass. That's one of the best Elite Force. Like that shit was awesome.
Yeah, no,
the
I remember problem, that game. I
that game
the Star
was
Trek
really
MMO
awesome.
Too.
I don't know the contracts for this game, but and I think Jeff, you can comment to this too, if not Andrew and Garnet. But I don't know how much they paid for the voice actors. More and more, when you get booked on something like this, that's part of your deal. Like, you get $25 million and you're locked in for 5 Star Trek movies and you're doing VO for 3 Star Trek games and you show up and you don't care. I'm not saying that I don't know these individuals, but oftentimes it's very much, you have to do this, and then you're in there and you're like, well, here's this thing I'm doing. And then you
actually, what I did was I just added Rise of the Guardians, the video game, Rise of the Guardians, on my Gamefly queue so that I can, I don't know if Chris Pine is in it, but he's the main character of that movie, so I'm curious to see if the voice acting sounds as phoned
that's
in
interesting.
There. I have a feeling that Star Trek is actually especially bad. Like, they just didn't get a voice director, or I'm not exactly sure.
It's easy to speculate. I would guess that it has more to do with the fact that they were handed a list of, you know, you had these 50 lines to say, and they have no idea what inflection of the guy coming from them is giving them.
Actually, maybe they were given a list of words, and they just recorded the individual words, and then someone
it's
just
not
stitched
that
it all
bad.
Together.
It's not that bad. There are some
you see
there.
It when you see it with those waggy jaws that are just animated and not lip synced. It comes across pretty. I'm sorry. Sorry to be so upset about Star Trek, but I am sorely disappointed.
I mean, you were so hype over it.
Sorely disappointed.
The good news is, at next year's Coachella, Waggy Jaws is opening. So,
you see that Jimmy Fallon video that they interviewed people going to Coachella? Jimmy Fallon, I'm sorry. Jimmy Kimmel. And it was like they just made up band names. And it was like, it's funny. Really funny. It's like, are you excited about the Regis Philbins? Love them.
They really love just them. Lying.
What's your
teeth?
Favorite part about them? They're so innovative. And I wanted to see them last year, and I didn't get to, and now they're going to be great.
That sounds like a Spicer bit almost.
Poor people.
All right, we got one more segment to go. Stick around, folks. We can confirm we'll be right back.
Firm and young with a laid-back tongue. The aim is to succeed and achieve at 21. Just like Ringling Brothers, our days in a sound. Captivate the mass cause the pose is profound. Do it for the strong, we do it for the meek. Boom it in your, boom it in your, boom it in your Jeep. Or your Honda, or your Beamer, or your Legend, or your Benz. The rave of the town to your foes and your friends. So push it along, trails we blaze. Don't deserve the gong, don't deserve the praise. The tranquility will make you unball your fists. For we put hip-hop on a brand new twist. A brand new twist with a whole heap of mystic. So low-key that you probably missed it. But yet it's so loud that it stands in the crowd when the guy takes it.
So good.
I hope you're booming it and booming it and booming it in your Jeep right now.
Or your Lexus. Anyway, you know how I knew I was going to have a great experience with Star Trek? It was when I finally got control and there was that little dot right in the middle of the screen to make sure I knew where the center of my cursor was all the time. That's helpful. It's helpful. You know, it's helpful. It's like that for shooters, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got to have that little pip.
A little dot.
Make sure it's right there. It's like a little spot in your face.
Mm-hmm. There's some cool ideas, like the 360 rotating thing.
There,
right at the
beginning. There are some cool ideas in there. And yeah, like I said, if you're a super Star Trek fan, there might be some redeeming content there for you to pick up later when you get a chance to get it on the cheap Or pick it up on your Gamefly queue.
There you go.
Especially if you ship Spock and... never mind.
What?
No, I forgot the... I actually don't know anything about Star
Kirk?
Trek. Oh. Yes, there we go, Kirk.
Really? You didn't know Kirk?
I only watched the J.J. Abrams
Yeah, no, Kirk's in
movie.
That.
Yeah. I fell asleep in it. So
and the game does fit between the two movies. Supposedly. Yeah.
That's good.
Anyway, what's up, Mr. Kanata?
I've been playing a lot of games this week, man. Mm-hmm. I went Rocket. A little game crazy. Loyal listeners to the show know how much I loved Crysis 2.
Tried to twist my arm several times to play it.
I think it's awesome. Very underrated shooter. Really, really fun. Cool story that just goes to an awesome place by the end.
But it's even better in Crysis 3.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I haven't finished it, so I don't know. But I'm digging Crysis 3 a lot. I'm digging it a lot.
I finally got around
to playing it.
Hmm? Where are you? Like how?
Ooh, I would say about 4 or 5 hours in, so early.
What I loved about the game, and I finished 2 and finished 1. And then
did you finish 3?
90%.
Oh, I'm sure you're farther than me.
What I really liked about it, is that I think it blends those worlds well. Of like Crysis 1, you're on this island and you can go anywhere, and then Crysis 2 is you're in the city and very linear. And I loved the moments in Crysis 3 where you're now in destroyed New York, and it's like
looking.
I feel like it's bringing both together where it's a little more open than 2. And
well, but 2 is still those sort of node to node areas. You walk in the area,
right?
Pardon me. You walk in the area and then you can look around and see. It's basically an arena where you can do all kinds of really cool stuff. And that's still present here where it feels like it's these big arenas.
You're fast-traveled from event to event in 3 the same way you were in fast-traveled, but like story arc pulled out. It's not like 1 where here's the island and then you go.
But boy, sure. I enjoy that gameplay style immensely. I always feel super overpowered with that suit. Like I love getting into that area, turning on my visor, tagging dudes, knowing where they are at all times, and then sort of just like stalking them. You know, it's cool. And I think 2 really emphasized the idea of like this three-pronged approach where you can be fast or you can be strong or you can be stealthy, right? And I think this game, it backs away from that a little bit, and it really feels more like you want to be stealthy.
Especially as it.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm sort of hot and cold on stealth games. I'm not always enjoying them. But here, I really enjoyed. You know, you have the invisibility of your suit, cloaking, getting into a cool position, tagging everybody, and using the weapon du jour, which is the bow. But the bow is really fun.
When they push it too, because you don't lose cloak when you use it,
right.
Which is every other weapon. When you fire, you come out of cloaking. And so they really, they encourage stealth.
And the different arrow types are really fun to mess around with.
And though people have shot holes in the second tier of the AI, the first tier of the AI in its responsiveness to when things start to go weird is actually really good.
Well, I agree.
That's where it goes back to what we talked about in the first segment of like you have this game and when things break. I was talking to Mattis about this when we were both first playing it, and there's one arena that you're in, it's a really big kill box, and it seems all creative. And I was having the best time just sniping people, and I got everybody dead. And then there was one guy, and it has some really cool dialogue for guys, where he's like, I don't want to die.
Yeah.
I don't want to die.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Call my mom. Like, it's all this. And I'm like, this is awesome. I'm this predator. I'm going to kill him. Like, he has no idea. And it wasn't the situation where they kept coming to one spot. Like, I was moving around enough and doing it. And I was like, where is this guy? Ha ha. He's like, I don't want to die. And then I find him, and he's glitched out on the corner of a railing.
Aww.
And he's just like, keep walking straight. And he's like, oh, my God, I got to go around. I got to do it. And I was like, nope.
Well, at least he's trying to go around. I mean, the bad part is where you do sort of get that pile of bodies where it's like they're reacting and responding, but then they're not being attentive to the fact that there's already 3 dead dudes there.
Yeah, but they're pretty good at flanking.
They are. What I'm saying is I thought that the AI got a little unjustly undercut because it worked at like first level response, but then second level, I call second level response of like the first level response is, oh shit, something's not right here. I'm going off my programmed path.
Yeah.
And then when it went off the program path, it didn't have like the next tier response of, oh shit, if there's 3 dead dudes there, I probably don't want to walk up that staircase.
Yeah.
Because you still walked up the staircase and you became the 4th dead dude on the staircase.
I don't know. If I see dead bodies, I'm like, clearly the killer's moved on.
Oh yeah, he's left. He's gone.
And it's just stunning to look at. It's interesting.
One of the things I was going to mention about Star Trek when we were talking about it is I sort of have this preoccupation with I love to do like a fun thesis about it. The history of hacking minigames, you know? I love hacking minigames. I love games that really try to have interesting, fun hacking minigames. And I thought Star Trek, for all its faults, had some really fun hacking
minigames.
I would agree.
The hacking minigames are kind of cool.
Yeah. And the hacking...
The match the waveforms ones.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all pretty... They're pretty clever.
And there's a... what's the other one?
I liked Bioshock 1s.
Oh, yeah. Bioshock 1s are great. Although very, like... All of a sudden, we're playing a tile game but so much
super
fun.
Worked. Yeah. And then, playing the tile game thing in Bioshock sort of fit with the language of the world.
And the Deus Ex reboot, or I guess it wasn't a reboot, it was
the most recent one. Prequel.
What was it called?
Infinite
Human
War.
Revolution.
Human Revolution. Had great,
I need to play that.
Great hacking minigames.
You should play it on Wii U.
The hacking minigame in Crysis is pretty disappointing.
With the improved bosses, yeah.
It's too simplistic and kind of abstract and stupid. But I love hacking minigames.
Why do you think Crysis isn't a top tier franchise? Because people are like, no one cares.
It is
about-
in my book. It is.
Okay.
But I agree.
But why,
with you.
Why not in like 13 million other books?
I think it has. People are like, care about the Crysis story? Who cares? I think it has a story.
I think the story is a little bit.
Really? I think it's a. Like, I know Halo has had expanded universe stuff that's right. Cool and whatever. And I know there's like, you can hunt in Halo 4, you can find the audio logs that are a bitch to find, at least for me, because apparently I'm not good at finding them. But like Crysis, I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. I think what they
Well, the underlying sort of theme of what's happening is cool. The specifics of what's happening are unnecessarily obtuse and sort of poorly. Executed.
Well, I guess
I'm
comparing it to. I agree.
So, I gave up my humanity for this, and
so it's not a Bioshock, but I feel like it's a Call of Duty. Like the underlying story of that is just.
Well, I think you're comparing it to other games that are pretty crappy stories.
Well, but these games are well regarded and they're top tier shooters. Like, well, I don't get why Crysis wasn't able to break through and be that.
I don't either. I think Crysis 2 is such a hugely better game than Crysis 1, and I think it was the best shooter of that year, in my opinion. I think that's what I said on TRS at one point. I really dig those games, and so you can't, unfortunately, you just can't underrate how beautiful they are to look at, and that means a lot to me. I honestly. My jaw is agape.
Are you playing PC?
Yeah.
Console looks great too. Like for what they were able to push on that thing, it looks pretty incredible. Yeah, on PC, it's.
I'm playing PC and it is a work of art. I mean, it is unbelievable.
So what
and they
kept...
use and they sorry, but they and they use like early on. There's a level where you have to sort of leap from a broken. Train car to broken train car to stay out of this tall grass where there's these sort of creatures lurking in that you can't see in the
I
grass.
I loved that.
Well, it's an example of using the great graphics as actually a gameplay element of like, hey, we can do this really photorealistic tall grass and it doesn't look like 2D, you know, sprites that are poorly animated. It looks like fucking grass. And then we can put a creature in it shuffling around and you can sort of see the grass move because of the movement of the creature. Well, let's build a level around that. You know, it really is additive and cool.
So I think you talked about maybe why you missed this game when it came out, like you were traveling or whatever. But for Crysis 2 being, because I feel like even you have discounted the franchise into being not top tier because for Crysis 2 being your favorite game and then you don't get around to playing it for so long, like even though you were gone, I feel like right when you come back, like I was gone when Ascension came out, and right when I came back I bought it, like that was literally the first thing
I'm playing
did.
It now
I know, but so I'm just curious, I'm not saying you're doing it
I don't know.
Wrong
don't
but like,
tell me I don't love it
but you know what I mean, like I think it's interesting that for whatever reason this franchise gets backburnered by everybody.
I agree with you. I maybe that is a little bit to do with the narrative, or I don't know.
Well,
that's
I think Crysis 3 was just sort of thrown out there. I don't think EA really gave it the TLC that
they gave it the EA Partners treatment,
which isn't really
that's
that
the
much.
Point. Yeah. They gave it the EA Partners treatment.
I think
I don't know
anybody
EA
that passed on Crysis 3 and is looking for a shooter to play now. Maybe you finished Bioshock and you're like want to shoot stuff still.
Go get Blood Dragon.
Well, that isn't quite out yet, but.
It is really fun. The world looks beautiful. It's a great designed world, as you said, that destroyed it's beautiful destruction. It's a post-apocalyptic city that is lush and green with overgrowth, and there's water, and it's just stunning.
I think the Crysis brand has always been a little maybe mismanaged, because the first game was so demanding. And then when the second game came out, it's like,
alienated those original fans or something? Like, it's a different style?
Well, by bringing it to console gamers are like, oh, but we're going to get the watered-down version of the game.
I think there's still a persistent feeling amongst its... So look, its original fan base was Far Cry.
Right.
And there's no denying that there is an element that never came across from Far Cry to Crysis, because they felt like they had been betrayed from the island openness of Far Cry into the Crysis and the suit and the mechanisms to fit the suit.
I mean, remember, like, Far Cry Crysis had much more of that open feel.
But it still wasn't like, it wasn't as open and as here's an island, run around, go where you want to, do what you want to. Like, yeah. Far Cry was more akin to Far Cry 3. I mean, really, more like Far Cry 3.
Well, even less like Far Cry. I mean, it was much more. This side of the island, stuff's going on, and that side.
And there was no getting from one place. Like, no matter where you were constantly feeling hunted. You were always like trying to make sure you were sticking to the cover. And by the cover, I mean like staying in the tall grass and staying out of people's lines of sight and paying attention to where you were looking. And then, of course, got crazy at the end with. But that rocket arm monkeys, but...
Yeah. But that thing that you talked about,
I think there's,
you always
talk about... We're talking about Crysis being backburned. I think it's because there was a portion of Far Cry's success and excitement and enthusiasm that never carried over to Crysis completely.
Possibly.
There's a theory.
Possibly.
It's just a theory.
What were you going to say, though?
Well, the thing that Garnet's always talking about in regard to like Skyrim and Oblivion and games like that, where you feel overwhelmed and you don't know where to go next and it's just too much and you kind of just don't want to do that... I felt that with the first Far Cry. And I don't feel that with role-playing game versions of that, because there's this vibrant world to explore. But when it's like, I'm crawling around in the grass and there's like 40 dudes over there and like a couple dudes over there. And I'm just like, you know what? I kind of just want to let them be. I don't want to wade into that.
I'm just a dude on a ship.
Yeah, you know what?
I'm not cut out for this deal, man.
Is there another area of the island that I could explore? There really isn't any reason for me to go over there. I don't need ammo that bad. I'm just going to use it to shoot these guys.
That's so. Far Cry 3. You can just hang the village partying the whole time. Like, what? There's a war going on. Hey, but look at us.
But Far Cry 3, at least, I don't know. It felt more structured.
No,
and I never came, ran into that problem also because I was like, well, I want a nice, better satchel, so I better go hunting boar. I like my satchels.
You said you've been playing a lot of games, so Far Cry 3 is good.
Far Cry 3, very, very good. I've been playing Star Trek. We already covered not as good. Monaco. Ozzy hooked me up with a code for Monaco, and I've been playing that on the PC as well. Monaco is a hard game to describe. It is...
It's a heist game.
Well, yes, but that doesn't...
That's it.
Tell
just,
the story.
No.
I mean, it's as if the Atari 2600 had a direct lineage of design to today. Like, we have today's technology, but in the Atari 2600 somehow was still
like there
being
was a
developed.
Rift.
That's
yeah.
actually
in
exactly.
time.
I like the way you put that. That's original. That's an excellent description for it. Because that right there, you're like, oh, okay, that's awesome. I'm with you.
It is Next. Awesome. It is awesome, and it is. It's a top-down game, directly top-down, not isometric, not three-quarters. You are looking directly top-down in the same way that you did with, like, Atari 2600 boxing, with, like, a circle as the head and two gangly arms
yeah.
hanging off of it. And you are infiltrating various levels and collecting coins and avoiding detection. It's a stealth game, but it's a stealth game where it hinges upon the fact that you're never going to be able to get through the level without someone finding you and chasing you. There's really no way to be completely stealthy. So part of what you're doing is dealing with people chasing you. Very similar to how on the Atari 2600, you might be playing a game like, Pac-Man, and getting a trail of ghosts running after you and dealing with them in certain ways and slipping down side avenues and poking out in other secret passageways and then finding the ghosts and running. So
there's a getaway element.
It's definitely a getaway element. I mean, you can shoot and kill these guys. You can use smoke bombs on them. You can do all kinds of stuff.
I love the idea of that in Pac-Man, where Pac-Man's like the ghost. He just turns around and is like, not today. I guess that's the power pellet.
The coolest thing that I should mention graphically, because I think you have this correctly, hopefully in your mind, you have this Atari 2600 aesthetic. But they do a really, really wonderful thing with line of sight. So that as you're walking through a level, which is basically just this top-down maze, you have varying angles that you can see through doorways or see through passages, and it's graphically represented by shafts of light. So as you're moving, the shaft of light is rotating based on how you could see through that archway or doorway or whatever. And it's a really interesting dynamic way to sort of run by a doorway and scope out what's inside it or whatever. And, oh, there's a guy in there. I can't let him see me, et cetera, et cetera.
And I think stuff like that is – like Mark of the Ninja had an interesting way of dealing with like how do you see what you can technically see.
Right.
But you can't see because of the view of the game. You should be able to see what's in there.
Yeah. But you're not omnipotent.
Right.
Just because you have an omnipotent view.
Yeah. Right, I think it's really cool.
Yeah. And it really – really what your currency that you're dealing with through getting through these levels is time. So it's all about like, you know, you run up next to a door and you just hold the direction of that you're facing the door to unlock it. And it just has a little timer that ticks down. So it's all about like, okay, that guy's on my tail. If I can sidestep him long enough to run over to that door and unlock it before he comes over and whacks me in the back of the head with his billy club, all, by the way, represented by like Atari 2600 style graphics. It's really very fun and clever and not like anything I've ever played quite before. You know, there's like a load runner element to it. If anybody remembers that old game that I loved when I was a kid.
You're playing on Steam, so I have to ask, did you ever play Frozen Synapse?
I did.
And
yeah.
So, like,
yeah. There's a I didn't think of that, but yeah.
But so Frozen Synapse is a like tactical Rainbow Six-like game.
Right.
But it's reduced in its graphics are more a little neon-y, shiny. But
yeah, and it was more turn-based, wasn't it?
It's turn-based. Yeah, it's totally turn-based. So it's turn-based and bounding lines and all that kind of stuff. So I've sort of got this vibe to me of when I played Monaco at events of or like PAX of it being like sort of real-time, full-speed escape getaway version in 2600 graphics of like that same sort of vibe.
Yeah, exactly. And you remember playing Load Runner where you would be sort of zipping around the level like. It's sort of like top-down Load Runner slash Pac-Man slash...
And you haven't even gotten into the multiplayer part, which is like...
I haven't, which is really exciting.
That's where it's at.
Yeah.
So Monaco is all about the multiplayer piece. So.
And it's so stylish and so fun and kind of irreverent. And it's a really different kind of game.
I would be willing to bet you that this will not be the last time we talk about Monaco.
Oh, I'm sure that's...
Because I think it's a game that as it continues to grow and get attention and we play it, that we're going to come back to it because I think it's also going to be a game that generates stories.
That's fun. Well, Mattis
like
just
FTL
today...
type experience.
Yes.
Mattis
I think
just
it
today
has
said,
that same sort of power over people. It, so. Like I think it really does. And it's going to be interesting to see... I mean, this might be a game that I get on two platforms. Because I think it's going to be different to see the kind of way it's... I'm curious how the communities will develop. Like, how's it people are going to play it on Xbox and how people will play it on Steam. I think you get different play styles.
I was playing with
a controller. Well, of course you can play with a controller. Yeah, but I mean, just...
different types of gamers. Traditionally,
exactly.
Steam gamers are one type of person.
Gotcha.
Generally.
You know, they stay in someone's basement and, you know, don't have any lives. And, you know, people on Xbox are super cool, you know. I don't really
Dude,
understand.
Bro.
PSN guys are actually all women.
If they can tear themselves away from the, you know, latest Gears of War update. Womp womp.
Was that
I was just being snarky.
Yeah. Oh.
I was just being snarky. I guess we're ready to, like, do finishing moves. Unless you, like, you have anything. What else would you like to talk about?
I mean, those were like, the big three games that I played this week.
And I guarantee you we're coming back to Monaco. So I was giving you the out because I think, like, that's the surface. I think you gave, like, the surface scratch of Monaco. And I think that you'll...
I'm excited to play multiplayer. That's really, I think, the game is made for and... haven't had a chance, but like I was saying, Mattis got it on PC this week, and he was like, oh, let's play, and I'm excited to.
Sweet.
So,
all right, let's do the finishing moves then.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
That means I have to pick who goes first, and I think Andrew.
So maybe this is old news, but I've been marathon watching the league, and you know me, I don't care about football at all.
I'm so happy right now.
And that show is terrific. I am
hilarious.
Absolutely in love with it. And I'm sure I'm missing some extra level by not understanding any of the football references, but that show is so good. And I'm up to season 3 on Netflix now, and it just keeps on getting better. And it makes my day when I go back home and I really want to unwind. I just throw on some episodes of The League. So good. It's moving to a new network, though. Do you know?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
TBS.
So it's on FX right now. Do you know what the new network it's moving to is?
I guessed TBS. I clearly am
wrong. NFL Network?
FXX.
Whoa, it's a whole other X!
Is that their comedy FX network?
I have no idea what it is, but apparently Fox is making another cable network.
FX squared.
Which is FXX,
it's
which is...
FX for the person that you just divorced.
And next year is FXX.
FX XXX.
Well, it worked out great for MTV2. I mean, MTV2 certainly became the thing.
But if you haven't watched it, you should watch it. I think people saying, I don't like football, I won't like it, is like saying, I don't like hanging out in bars, I won't like Cheers. It's like, that's just the rapper that gets these funny people together to go have
There's
fun
a
together.
Rapper in it?
Yeah.
There is a rapper in
Taco.
It.
Taco. Yeah. He actually has a rapper.
really terrific. Can't recommend it enough.
And you can get it on Netflix streaming.
And you can watch it on Netflix. Yeah.
Jeff Cannata.
I realized I was playing another game this week, and it's an iOS game called Spell Collapse. And you know me and my word games. I love my word games, Rudy. And I have been enjoying Spell Collapse. Spell Collapse is like a lot of word games where you make the word and it makes the tiles that had those letters in it, you know, either disappear or explode the ones around them.
Or collapse.
Indeed. The trick, the difference here is, and it might be too much of a difference. I haven't played enough to really know. But once you select the letters that are adjacent to one another to create your word, you can then sacrifice a few points by and to get the option to rearrange any of the letters as much as you want. So all you have to do is find 8 letters that are adjacent to one another that comprise any word, and you can rearrange them to your heart's content to form the correct word that you want. Again, you're sacrificing some points, but at a certain point, it's like it adds this word jumble layer that is almost too much, because I look at my screen and I'm like, all I need to do is find 8 letters that make any word in any order. So I could stare at the thing looking for my next move for like a long time.
What are you doing, babe? I'm playing a game. You haven't moved.
I know. It's a thinker. It's a real thinker. But it's an interesting game. Designer alerted me to it, and so I will alert you guys to it. If you like word games, it's a new, interesting take, and it might break your brain
spell
like it broke
collapse.
Mine. Yeah, Spell Collapse.
Just iOS, or do they? Do
I believe at the moment it is only iOS. So
take that.
I have to have iTunes for a little while longer.
So I got back from my cruise, and I was like, whoa, SimCity 2.0 patch.
Yeah, big content, bruh.
What a strange game. By the way, interesting story that I read, and I think it actually came out last week, was an editorial, I think it was over on RPS, about how the talk from EA just sort of dried up on SimCity when they finally realized that they were just like digging themselves deeper and deeper and deeper.
Every time Lucy Bradshaw had anything to say, people got angrier.
She's like, maybe I should just not talk for a while.
So she's just driving around in a circle now, not saying anything.
I installed 2.0, which is like supposed to be the big patch that incorporates, by the way, they've also done a number of 1-point patches. I mean, there have been a significant number of, for a game that's been out for a month, there have been a significant number of patches. And I have to agree with one of the Shaq posters who said that, 2.0 is okay. It's almost like they're at 0.9 beta. I mean, and that's kind of sadly the truth. This game still is like so, there's a number of bugs that have cropped up in the 2.0 patch, including like sewage overloading and magnified pollution and roads that disappear and fire trucks that don't put out fires. And there's like this hilarious video of like a garbage collection truck that just sits there and spawns more garbage collection trucks right in place and just fills the entire street with garbage collecting trucks.
Garbage collecting truck collecting truck.
Yeah, it's like so bizarre.
Actually, this sounds like a fascinating game world to be in. Like, I would love to see game, like, just as a character, as a thing.
The, like, Wreck-It Ralph version of
having to live in this really surreal world where anything is possible.
Amazing. On my way here, yesterday I did see an ambulance with its sirens going, blaze past, everybody gets out of the way, and it pulled into a gas station, and the guy got out and just was filling up the tank.
I thought you were going to end that with, like, and then the gas station exploded.
No, he just needed gas.
So, a couple of things.
Really bad.
It does seem to be working considerably better. Definitely noticed improvements in traffic. Definitely noticed improvements in service providers. Is anybody still playing this? Because I'm like looking for my, like, we, like a month ago, everyone was so hyped for this game, and now I'm looking for people. I'm like, okay, I want to, like, 2.0. Well, I figured there'll be people jumping back in. I want to play with some of my friends so I can do, like, the region thing. And I'm like, well, is anybody playing anymore?
Well, that's why they didn't have that many servers at launch. That's how many people they thought would be playing. Also, everyone's playing Dead Space 3, the free game that they got for
wow, the cynicism is strong with this one.
It is.
And then the second thing is that compounding that is then I realize that now that the game is working considerably better, it really highlights how much of a miss it is for me and how much I am in the old school. Like, it's nice that that's the game they wanted to make, but that's not really the game that the SimCity fans wanted. And like breaking it out into regionalized, compartmentalized mini cities within to make your city work, like that alone is annoying. But there's still, it's just a frustrating game. It's frustrating that that's the SimCity. So I'm going to still play it. And it's like weird because some people tweeted back. One guy tweeted me back. He's like, yeah, it's like not great and kind of broken, but I plat 200 hours in it.
I should post on misconnections like you, me playing SimCity. You, we're in my region for a little bit.
Yeah.
2.0's out. Want to come back?
You spawned infinite garbage trucks.
I don't know. I mean, so after playing a little bit, well, like I got my city going pretty decently. I'm now like, okay, so do I wait for another set of patches? Do I try to get people back in? I don't know. Anyway, SimCity 2.0 patches available. If you had SimCity and you put it aside, you should at least go back and grab that and see if it's ready for a play experience that you're up for. Christian.
I believe the first time I met this guy was at the show I do in San Diego, and he's now, unfortunately, former narrative and cinematic designer. He was formerly with High Moon, and I believe we talked about it here.
That's a bummer.
Let a bunch of people off, and he worked on a game I really like, Transformers Fall of Cybertron, which I think was, for talking about Star Trek, a licensed game that, I thought those Activision High Moon Transformer games were pretty solid, awesome games.
Especially the ones where they got to do their own thing.
Right, yeah. So they were out of, you know, cartoon canon. And so this is just a plug for him. He's in the world. I think a lot of, unfortunately, video game great talented people are, and then they're looking for work. And I think he's in San Diego right now, but I imagine he's willing to relocate. But Jaffe, I know you listen, bro. Hook him up, man. So Neil David Carter is a former High Moon guy, and we've talked at shows, and nice guy. I don't know how to judge work, but he has a reel online if you want to check it out. It's vimeo.com/NeilDavidCarter/demo reel. All I know is that I enjoyed the game, the last game that he worked on. He's a nice guy. If someone out there is looking for someone in a role that he can fill, that'd be awesome. That's people coming together. And then reiterating what I said, enjoy the games you enjoy. I like God of War Ascension.
Don't tell me what to enjoy.
I liked GoldenEye Wii. I liked that game.
Be in the moment and enjoy what you're playing.
I recorded a bonus round today with David Jaffe, and you're right. He actually does listen. I was very, very flattered and very – it felt so awesome that he actually does enjoy the show. He said it was his favorite podcast.
Oh. Sweet.
Yeah. So thanks, Jaffe. Appreciate that.
Thanks, David. Appreciate the love. All right, folks, thanks very much for joining us. And as always, thanks to the lovely staff here at the Atlantis Group. We have Micah in the booth today, Dave back there doing the producing for us and hollering at us in our ears. Thanks to our guests, of course, Christian Spicer, the regular folks here with Andrew, Jeff, and I. That's it, folks. That's the entire show. We'll be back next week with number 163. Until then, that's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are... Yeah. I was going to make a joke about Call of Duty ghosts, but I think I'll just say that we are ghosts. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. Body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This episode of Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.